Hey, listener, what's up? Thanks for clicking whatever you click to get here. Episode 119 of the Jock and Nerd Podcast. And this is a good one. It's got a little bit of everything. We got the return of Rug Boy. We got a special guest. We got some geek news. We got a movie review. And it's all live streaming on Blab, so you know it's going to be wacky in this edition of the Jock and Nerd Weekly for Thursday, August 4th, 2016.
It's the Jock and Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Anthony and Imran.
Jock and Nerd! Hi there, my name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock!
And he's the nerd.
Welcome to the Jock and Nerd Podcast, returning from his trip to Romania. Did he get his prolapse slack hole fixed? We're gonna find out! Rug Boy, what's up? I missed you!
What's up, motherfuckers? I have returned!
Good Earth, you also joining us on this very special episode. First time on Blab, the ginger geek himself, Matt Delhauer. Matty, what's up? Nice to see you in from face to face, finally.
Yes, screen to face. It's definitely what I've always dreamed of.
He's, to us, Anthony, I don't know, to us, I feel like he's always just been this voice the whole time.
He's always been this disembodied voice.
Right? And,
comes from voice. The heavens, yeah.
Of course, you know, I did the little cyber stalking on the internet, so I knew what you look like, but I'm glad you could make it here for this show. Before we get to Rug Boy's story, I just want to talk to you, new listener. If this is their first show, this is what's going to happen. You picked a great one, because this is like we're combining all of our formats into one fucking thing. This is a live on Blab Jock and Nerd Weekly. We got geek news to go over. We're going to review a Batman the Killing Joke animated movie, and we got a special guest, Matt Delhauer, joining us. So, a little bit of everything.
Boy, did you luck out.
Yes.
Yeah. Whoever's listening to this has hit the fucking jackpot.
You can't go wrong.
Get like Peter Parker when he saw Mary Jane that first time.
Now, Rugs, welcome back. How was your trip to Romania? What happened? Quick update.
Well, I'll tell you this. I was not impressed, Imran.
Oh, really?
When I got to Romania, I thought I was going to see lettuce everywhere. There was no lettuce. And I thought I was going to see, like, Olympic gold medal winning gymnasts, and I saw none of those.
No, there was no salad bars, no...
Yeah, nah. I thought there'd be vampires and shit. Were there nothing.
It's just
it's like poorish white people there.
Now, you know, if you've been following along with the show, our puppet friend Rug Boy had a little incident and popped a couple of stitches, and all his cotton fell out, and it was problematic. So he had to travel all the way back to Romania, where he was kind of where the curse began. Is that why you went
Matt,
back there?
Delhauer, if you're lost on this, so is like half of our listeners. It's fine.
Yeah, no one knows about this.
I'm just going to sit here and let it happen.
Yeah. If you're lost and equally confused about why we're talking about this, so am I. So it's fine.
Listen, all I want to say is I just imagined Rug Boy in Romania kind of like Fievel from American Tail walking around going, I'm looking for my family.
Yeah.
But giving people the finger a lot more?
Yes. So, and a lot smellier. So,
and I was bumming a lot of cigarettes. I was bumming lots of cigarettes.
I'm pretty sure that's currency cigarettes over there.
Yeah. That is how you pay for stuff. That's how you avoid trouble.
Sorry to our Romanian listeners.
Yeah.
Our Romanian listener.
Anthony, check the stats in Romania before we continue. They're probably just bots. I'm convinced the Slovakian listeners are now just bots because they have yet to like raise their hand and say, yeah, I'm a listener from Slovakia. Anyways, Rugs, welcome back. Yeah. We missed you. I'm glad you got back in one piece and, the Gestapo didn't kidnap you or you weren't caught like a Pokemon out there in a special Pokemon ball.
Well, some people tried to catch me.
Oh, boy.
But I think for different reasons. And I can tell you why. And I even think that the guy that I went to see was suspect because he said, look, okay, I'm going to take care of your problem. Don't worry. Blah, blah, blah. And he gave me this thing to drink. And then I passed out.
Oh, no.
And then I kind of half woke up in the middle of it. And there was like different guys operating on me. But I felt a lot of things going in and out.
Oh,
and,
shit.
And a lot of people say, push it, push it, push it. And I don't know what that means. So, like, was I delivering a baby?
You were saying
was
it getting...
Yeah.
Did you visit Bill Cosby? I don't know. Yeah. You might have fucked up, went to the wrong place.
Yeah. But you know what? I feel better. Magically, I do.
Okay,
good. I didn't get a cure for my my condition, though, unfortunately.
You're still a felty. Once a felty, always a felty. I wouldn't have it any other way. look, we got a little bit of light news, and then we're going to get to the major part, which is our review. Let's get to the news.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
Yahoo!
Jock and Nerd!
So, look, Suicide Squad is out right now, today.
This is like a nice little tease for our next show.
You can immediately just leave and go watch it.
Yes,
I don't know if we'd notice.
Go watch it right now. This is a nice tease for our next show. This is a nice tease for what we put on the Patreon, and we'll discuss that at the end of the show. But look, this movie's out now, and I was really excited. I love the trailers. What'd you think of like that last trailer? That was that had the fun music. I thought it was cut really well to the music.
The Queen trailer I thought was great. The last one that came out of Comic-Con with the 21 Pilots song was the one where it was like, wait, are they trying to take part of this seriously? Because I thought that this thing was supposed to be like a 2-hour just like joyride of everything blowing up and half-naked women. Everything they'd done before this was like, this is going to be the Fast and Furious of the DC Marvel or the DC comic universe.
Yep.
And then the last one was like, oh, wait, no, we have a plot and like character development probably. It's like, oh, well, I hope you don't screw up.
Yeah, probably. Like, the marketing of this movie has been great. The posters have been great. And I was excited to see this. Let's check in with some of these aggregated review scores. Currently on Rotten Tomatoes, it's sitting at 27%. Also, let's compare that.
It's tied Batman versus Superman.
It's tied, yes, where it was.
That's lower. No, that's
and look, if you don't like the RT, Metacritic, it's at 41 right now, which is also not a very good score. So that kind of dampens my enthusiasm. Anthony, how are you going to go in to watch this movie now? Did you read any of these reviews? We're going to have this discussion on a review show, but man, this shit has blown up everywhere.
I mean, you can't look at those numbers and not inevitably be right? kind of sad walking into that movie, this movie. So, of course, it's going to affect things. But I equate it to like looking at Yelp before you go to a new restaurant.
Sure.
And if you look at Yelp and you're like, man, the fucking reviews for this are terrible, you're kind of going to go in and be like, maybe the food's going to suck. Mm-hmm. So hopefully with those low expectations, maybe this movie will impress me.
Well, that's a little different because people have different reasons for not liking things.
Right.
Like, you know, like the waiter was bad or whatever. But like, a movie's a movie. You know, it gets criticized equally. Like,
it's a lot of
movie. Everybody gets the same movie when they go see it.
You have a lot of different things that people will criticize a movie for, though. Some people will be like, oh, I feel this person didn't do a great job with the role. You'll have a lot of people will be like, oh, this isn't exactly like the comic book, so I hate it. Instead of it being like, you know, it was actually a pretty well put together film, despite the fact that maybe it wasn't, you know, unbelievably true to the comic. Or on the other side, it could be very true to the comics, but it could just be a poorly made film.
And to piggyback on that, too, like taste, everyone's got different taste buds. Everyone's got a different sweet tooth. Some people like sour stuff. Some people like savory stuff. So it looks that's my restaurant comparison is valid.
Yummy. I like savory and sweet together.
Let me ask you this, though. Where do you stand with usually the aggregate websites? Are you right with them, or are you just a little bit apart from them? Or are you completely apart from them on most movies?
Good question.
Jurassic World, I was not with them. So Jurassic World, I think, got some pretty good reviews. I'll look it up.
It got fairly decently reviewed. Yeah.
They're still saying that was like a success in terms of picking a smaller director.
It was 71% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's a pretty fresh movie, and we all blasted it. Overall, though, I would say I usually come on the same side as what aggregates would.
What about you, Matt?
Honestly, I'm either way. I mean, for things like when it came to Batman vs. Superman, I was pretty much on board with what they were saying. I agree. I don't think Jurassic World was honestly a 74.
Yeah.
No. I think it was fun and stupid, but I don't think it was a movie that should have made like as nearly as much money as it did.
Yeah.
So it's really, I can never really base myself off of what anybody else says. And it's always a case by case basis. As far as I see it, sometimes I will, sometimes I may not. So despite what they're saying, I know I'm going to go in and I'm going to wait until I'm done with it. I agree with Anthony. Walking in the door, my first thought is going to be like, all right, let's see how bad can it really be, versus like walking in and being like, this is going to be great. I'm going to love every moment of this, and this is going to be the greatest film in the world.
And what's happened with these DC movies, I feel, for me, now they've become what I like to call car accident movies. Like, I need to be there right in front opening day to watch this train wreck, because so far the same thing is happening that happened with Batman vs. Superman. And these superhero movies, it's weird, because you got to approach them two different ways. There's the critical film, critical eye. Then there's also just the geek fun factor of the seeing these characters. And now after seeing this, I'm lowering my expectations, and all I want is to have fun from this movie. That's the only thing. If it does that, to me, it'll be a success based on all this bullshit.
Have you heard that there's two copies of the movie floating around?
There's two, possibly three. Like, technically, there's the studio cut I heard. I heard there's the
Ayers
cut. But they
showed it to people.
And they showed two cuts.
Yeah.
And then I heard they kind of mushed those cuts together, which really makes me worried.
Whoa. Yeah, from what I've heard, I mean, the big reviews that I think everyone has been talking about is, like, whatever that third, like, amalgamation cut is. Because, I mean, as much as I've tried to avoid any of these, like, you know, reviews, so I'm not spoiling myself for it, I know I've seen things where people just put up on Facebook, like, blah, blah, blah said this. The biggest thing I've heard is they've said that it's in the same vein as, like, Batman versus Superman. You get to a midpoint of the movie, and it seems like the entire movie just changes from what it was.
Yikes.
That's so, too many cooks in the kitchen, if you ask me.
So
here's what I – one second, Imran.
Yeah.
Here's what I've kind of gathered from just looking at the periphery of reviews is it seems like – and I know I'll find out after I watch the movie, but it seems like – the studio kind of panicked after BVS and started fiddling around with Suicide Squad. And the result is a lot of people saying the movie was kind of a mess. But we'll see, because I haven't seen it yet.
The movie was pretty much done shooting when Batman versus Superman came out. And, you know, reshoots, blah, blah, blah. They spent millions. Again, we should save this for a Suicide Squad review. But here's my question. It's already made – it made $8.1 million overseas already. They had projected – they're projecting $140 million opening weekend. I think the reviews are going to hurt the box office, because this isn't a case like Batman vs. Superman where, despite the reviews, you know it's Batman, it's Superman, it's Wonder Woman. I'm going to go see it. This is one of those movies that you're going to be like, I don't know who these fuckers are. Let me check the reviews. Oh, I'll probably skip this now.
I don't agree as much.
Yeah. Okay.
With you are going to have the Harley and Joker fanatics are going to see this movie no matter what the hell you say about it.
Okay, yeah.
Outside of that,
they got that.
You are going to have – it's going to do like it did with Batman vs. Superman. It's going to do well first weekend because no one has seen it. And with how many people turn around and said, like, oh, I don't believe anything from Rotten Tomatoes anymore.
Right, right.
As if it was its own review site.
We'll get into that in a hot second.
The first weekend, you're going to see a lot of people. Once people are getting, reactions from somebody they know saying, oh, no, don't go see it or something like that is when you'll start to see the drop.
But the thing is, it's like DC in general, they have a fucking problem. I saw that extended edition of Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, these decisions to take these things out are retarded. Like, you need to have all that stuff in there.
We're gonna have another like extended cut of this fucking movie to like apparently all a lot of Joker shit was deleted. Look, we're gonna see the movie. We're gonna circle back. Here's the thing: is I am so excited to talk about this movie now, even before seeing it. Based on what happened today, and since the review embargo was lifted, bring it on! Oh, this is gonna be fucking great. So, speaking of Rotten Tomatoes, we got a bag on this silly petition that was up for like a day.
Oh, the 365 Flicks guy started that.
Did they? Actually, I think that's inaccurate. But who did start it is this dude.
You don't know that.
It says, now his name is here, this dude from Alexandria, Egypt, Abdullah Goldwater or Coldwater. I saw both, two names. He put
that
up this.
Like such a dude on him.
Abdullah Goldwater? Yeah, first of all, what's going on there? Second of all, this petition is already done. He's like, I started this to gather DC friends to express our anger for fun. I didn't mean to be taken that serious. In his defense, he goes, look, I don't want to spread the speech of hate and online fighting. The movie is something to enjoy, and the hate and the fighting is the opposite of enjoying. But before it got withdrawn, 17,000 people prove to the world that they don't know what the fuck an aggregate website actually does.
Oh, shit.
Come on, people. Seriously? Like, you thought that shutting down a website that just pulls in reviews is going to do anything? I don't understand the thought process behind
it. I have breaking news.
Yes. They'll just have to look at a bunch of other websites all say they hate it on their own instead of having them all thrown at them at once.
Anthony, how does the website work?
Oh, sorry. Real quick. I just my friend Rex, who's been on the show.
Yeah.
Literally just texted me, wow, that was terrible.
Oh, he saw it. Oh, snap.
Oh, shit.
First person we know review. There you go, listener. Straight from a regular.
Literally just.
You heard it live.
Heard it live. He was on, he did the Avengers, right?
Age of
Ultron, episode 10. All right. So, Anthony, your thoughts on this.
Oh, Rotten Tomatoes? I mean, it's just stupid.
Yeah.
It's like Jovan said, it's a fundamental misunderstanding of what the site even is. So. There's no point in even discussing this with people that think Rotten Tomatoes should be shut down.
17,000
I have a petition to get Anthony to appreciate me more.
Oh, let's start that.
Can we get that going?
It currently has two signatures. Both say Rug Boy.
David Mobley says Rex isn't going to stop me from seeing it tomorrow. Screw him.
Screw him.
Hi, Jordan. Jordan's in the house. We have our four boxes full, so she's going to support us in the chat. But... yeah, so whatever. That's fucking stupid. 17,000 people, though? Come on. And finally, let's just congratulate President Jeff Johns. He got a promotion. Jeff fucking Johns is now – he's like two things, dude. His title, he's still Chief Creative Officer and President of DC Entertainment.
Let me ask you guys something. Warner Brothers, do you think – we will start to see his fingerprints on stuff. Do you think we're seeing it with Wonder Woman stuff?
Well,
or are we seeing it at all on Suicide Squad? Yeah, and movies.
I would say, yeah, it's going to start with Wonder Woman, and we're already seeing it with that trailer for Justice League. The fact that there's legitimately humor in it shows that he has done something.
Yes, and the Wonder Woman looks so, you know, Suicide Squad might have been too little, too late for their course correct. It might be a wash. It might be another case of
what I fear. Even
Wonder Woman was being filmed while he was converted.
What I'm afraid of is the massive reshoots they did after Batman vs Superman. I'm really afraid that was on Johns's word.
Oh,
that he was
for,
like, you know what?
Suicide Squad.
We need to do something to try and lighten this up, and then it just completely screwed with the tone.
Yikes! And then there's like multiple editors and stuff. And when you start doing that, everyone, there's no vision. There's nobody driving the fucking train. It's all over the place. So, but here's the thing. Jeff Johns.
I'm wondering if this will be their Fantastic Four.
No. Look, I've seen reviews from all across the board, from this is the shot in the arm the DCEU needs to just it's okay, to this is better than Batman vs. Superman, to this is worse than Batman vs. Superman, to all the way this is worse than Josh Trank's Fantastic Four. Look, I've seen all of those things said.
You have a bunch of people that are not established in the general, you know, mainstream public, like all these other characters. The characters people care about is Harley Quinn, Joker, and Will Smith.
Yep.
I think a lot of the people that are going to the movies to see that are not going to give a shit about anything. They're going to watch, you know, Harley Quinn be half naked and the Joker be Jared Leto and really be like the hottest Joker ever, you know?
Yeah.
He's a sexy Joker. It's upsetting.
He is. Yeah. He's cut, dude. David Mobley asked, what I want to know is they're going to be an R-rated version of Suicide Squad. Look, it's going the same way as BBS. They might do the fucking same thing with an extended R-rated cut just to fucking
As far as I know, Ayer said that it's only ever meant to be PG-13. That they never, like, did a really violent version and then cut it back. That he was like, no, it's going to be 13. I know it. So we're just going to aim for that.
He did say that that's his cut. Like, that's
I was going to bring that up because you keep bringing up the studio.
The theatrical cut is the cut.
He officially said it was his cut.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if I believe that, but that's what he's saying.
Well, he also came out and said that he thought Snyder did an amazing job with Batman vs. Superman. So... I honestly think that when you are in with the company, it's not in your best interest to, you know, shit talk the company before your movie comes out.
Everybody saw what happened to Josh Trank.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Now he's blackballed, so you better play nice. You know what I mean? And just kiss ass and say and take any kind of bullets that they need him to take. You know, fall on the sword for him.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. Moving on.
It should
on.
Be an interesting movie review, regardless of what happens.
Yeah, dude, I can't wait to talk about this movie. Plus, I would vote for President Jeff Johns for America over the fucking robot and the purple guy that we have right now. So maybe we should make that happen.
That's a little too far there. All right.
All right. We're skewing to a little serious.
I envision Jeff Johns in the Oval Office trying to run really fast and run through time to fix things, and he just keeps hitting the wall. That'd be funny.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Imran's trying to do a whole
flash.
He's like, I want boob tubes in the White House.
Boob tubes in the White House. Boob tubes and
make
boob
it
tubes.
Happen.
Make it happen. All right, I got one bit of MCU news that's a jock and nerd mashup. Anthony, you're gonna like this. Following in the footsteps. A George St. Pierre, MMA fighter and Captain America, Marvel's Spider-Man Homecoming cast continues to get bigger, people. They've added UFC champ Tyron Woodley. Is that how you say his name?
Yes, it is. Tyron Woodley.
The cast. We don't know who he's playing, but Anthony, what can you tell us about Tyron Woodley?
He's the champ. He just knocked out Robbie Lawler for the 170-pound title last Saturday.
Whoa.
Does this make me excited? No. Why would this make me excited?
I was going to say, because the first question is, can he act?
Yeah, you're gonna bring in a horrible actor into a film? That'd be like me saying, man, I'm really excited to see fucking Tom Holland fight in the UFC. No. I'm not excited to see untrained fighters in the ring, and I'm not excited to see untrained actors acting.
Did you not?
Oh God! Do you think they're going to have it that he took on the Spider-Man persona and did UFC instead of wrestling?
Oh snap! Oh, I think he may have just figured out part of that. Would make so much sense if you're updating this and you're using that mythology of him being a wrestler, huh? I didn't even think about that. Good call. Look, did you not enjoy GSP in Captain America? I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, so he didn't really have to any lines, so yeah, he was good.
So you do the same thing with this guy. But
I mean, that didn't make me excited when I heard about casting either.
All right, but there's a
fun athletes in films doesn't do anything.
Have it so he doesn't say anything. He gets knocked unconscious, and you go, oh, wow, he knocked him out? That means he's super strong. Next scene.
Yeah. I can't wait till I get the phone call from Spider-Man Homecoming.
I mean,
they're putting everybody in it.
Really?
You're actually going to get the phone call for Ted 3.
Yeah. You could be the bad guy in Ted 3. That would be great. Like, or the sidekick.
Any fuck from Disney could be in that movie. Anybody that ever worked for Disney, any intern is like now in the cast of this movie.
Yeah,
everyone.
You're absolutely.
I guarantee you, like a majority of their extras are just going to be like executives' kids who are in high school now.
Yep. Every fucking the fucking guy works.
That's
in
what
the,
it is.
It is the quintessential Disney movie. Like
I think the guy that works at the Disney commissary has a speaking part. That's what I heard. I don't know, but look. Fun fact, this article mentions that I thought was cool. Tom Holland was there at UFC 201 to watch him win the title. So now he gets to, like, pretend to punch him, I guess. Next bit of movie news, I want to talk about monster news. We just, our last episode was that awesome G-Fest episode. Lots of fun and lots of awkward audio to be enjoyed. People, go check it out. But Shin Godzilla did pretty well at the box office in Japan, and mm-hmm. is getting some good reviews.
I read some reviews.
What have you guys read so far? What are your thoughts on this?
I think the most I can say is a Japanese Godzilla movie doing well in Japan is so not surprising.
$6.1 million, first Japanese Godzilla in 12 years. So, yeah, of course it's going to be a big one.
From everything that I've read and I've heard, there's quite a few American people, like, you know, stationed over there, you know, soldiers that went to go see it or whoever. And some of them are big Godzilla fans. Some of them are kind of like, you know, intermediate. And their reactions were, number one, they are pushing the shit out of this movie.
Oh, really?
It's on like ads on TV all over the place. Everywhere they go, there's Godzilla everywhere. It's being marketed like no other movie, like no other Godzilla movie before. So you got to take that into consideration when you see about the ticket sales. Number two,
Godzilla's on the radio every 20 minutes. It's just
they've even put him in commercials with anime and stuff like that, anime characters and all that type of shit. So there really is. There's a 3D game.
It's like a nationwide celebration right now of Godzilla.
It's a cultural return.
Yeah,
it's a big push. And the guy who directed this movie or was a co-director, Anno, he did the Evangelion animation, which is very popular over there. There's, it's so popular that Evangelion has stores and shit over there. There's video games, there's pachinko games and all that stuff. So it's like a hugely popular guy making this movie. So you got a lot of things at play here. From what I've heard, a lot of people like it. But there are the things that I've heard that I don't like are still there. So we'll see.
I mean, from what I gather, there's a great review and the guy's like, this is an auteur Godzilla, you know, and there aren't many of those. This is a Hideaki Anno movie and his style is all over this. And that's good for fans of Evangelion because they got lots of fans. Anthony, what are your thoughts?
I actually already spoiled the whole movie for myself.
Oh, you read the.
But I won't spoil that. I won't spoil that on the air. But I will say that I think this movie is doing very well in Japan because it's a very Japanese themed movie in terms of there's a lot. They're touching upon Japan being this culture that for a while has not been able to handle their own problems. There's an American embassy sort of character in there that's kind of represents America and like the foreign nations trying to help. And it's very like Japanese pride. Like we're going to take care of this on our own.
Oh no. It's never good when you have Japan putting in an American character,
but I like,
it's a half Japanese, half American character.
I like,
so I don't know if it'll resonate as much here.
Right. Yes.
But over there it's touching upon things that they've been going through.
Yeah, it would probably be big with like your kaiju movie fans, but it's not going to be like they're going to bring it over here and it's suddenly going to be a huge American like box office hit too.
No, and they didn't make it for us. And you got to remember the earthquake in 2011 that led to the Fukushima meltdown, how devastating that was. The reviews I read is this is a response to that. They're working that into the movie. Which yeah, I also
it's very
read.
Tied to that.
Yeah, that's great. Which I saw an article that said Fukushima has polluted a third of the world's water irradiated so far.
Yay.
Since then.
Yeah, so Godzilla's really going to happen.
Dude, you could see a heat map, and there's just all the fish all the way going across the ocean. Like, that's all irradiated forever. Like, this fucked up. But Godzilla is probably going to happen. And give it a couple of years. Give it 15. Well, something's going to come.
I mean, we're going to get cancer from something.
I just want to point out some things here real quick. Yeah. I'm not going to spoil anything. But from what I've been told and what I've read, the screen time is not that different from the screen time in Godzilla 14, which everybody just went cuckoo over, saying it was not enough screen time.
Yep.
But I think the reason why this gets a pass is because there's so much of that political intrigue in there that the Japanese can bite into with the drama and so much of this like natural disaster shit. So even though you don't see Godzilla on screen, there's always a sense of dread and something happening and there's a tension and suspense going on.
Yeah, the human story in the 2014 movie was all right. I think the problem was everyone wanted it to be Bryan Cranston the whole time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. So when they were like, oh, I have to follow this jackass around as he has no idea what he's doing, I want to just see Godzilla fuck stuff up now.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. You nailed it.
The reviews for this have been surprisingly pretty good. So I'm very optimistic that I will like it when I see it. But I like Rugboy. There are some things that I've read in the reviews that I could have pointed out in the trailers and it would have been like, yeah, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Well,
there's some interesting choices. Let's just say too, about the Godzilla character.
I just feel very, this is my, my feeling is that if this is where they set, cause you know, every time they reinvent Godzilla, it sets the tone for the next few movies. I don't want this. I want this to be one and done. You know what I mean? I want, okay, one movie. Okay. I don't want this to set the tone for Godzilla. Cause I heard that there's not a lot of, movement going on in certain parts.
Very slow moving. That's what it looked like in the trailer. There may be a new Godzilla anime movie. They registered a domain, godzilla-anime.com.
They should have done that years ago.
I know. I'm surprised that it took them this long to register this URL, but nobody knows what's going to be there. So
I'll watch that.
Yeah, that would be cool. Show me some more. I mean, they haven't had a Godzilla cartoon since, like, the 70s?
Well, they had the 98 one that was American.
Oh, that's right.
But, oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, two more things, guys. We got to talk about Teen Wolf Superman. He showed up on set of the CW, Tyler Hoechlin. I don't know how you say his name. There's been a promotional photo and then a bunch of set photos and videos. And the promotional photo is the worst out of all of them. Have you guys seen this?
I know. Who's in charge there?
So I posted this.
Fire that person immediately.
I posted this to our Facebook group to hilarious comments. Like David Zika says, that's a really bad picture. He's got a superhero look. Not sure which superhero. Daniel Nosker says he kind of reminds me of what Superman looked like in the Flashpoint cartoon. Raymond Swanson said, is it me or is he a weird mashup of American Dad and Ash from Army of Darkness?
Oh, shit.
I can see that.
Give me some sugar, baby.
I can see that. And then I was like, I think he looks a little bit Cuban also. I don't know why. I want to say like he's got a little Cuban Desi Arnaz thing. And
he's Superman.
He's Superman, only 10% Cuban Pete, Superman, and then David Zika, his proportions look out of whack. This photo, the promo photo, his proportions do, like, did somebody size him down in Photoshop? What happened?
What I noticed was the weird thing was the way that they had his body positioned and then his head turned. One part of his neck was down in shadow, and the other part was so blown out with the light
that it
makes his neck look unbelievably skinny.
Yeah,
which immediately makes him just look not in any way muscular.
Well, the problem too with this photo is a Supergirl looks like it's a real photo that's kind of been touched up, but then he kind of looks just like a mannequin. Like, they touched him up so much that he doesn't look like a real person anymore.
I was about to say something important.
No, what do you think of the costume? What do you think of the costume?
Yeah, I think that the cape not having the big ruffles doesn't widen the shoulders out enough.
I don't like that gold the way it's attached. I don't.
I do like that. Really? I like it because it's a little bit different because it's not them doing the same outfit they've done for every show that they've ever done with him. They're trying to give it a little bit more of like a modern look.
But why does he have shin padding on it? Why does he have shin padding on his boots?
Oh, Emron, come on.
That's ridiculous.
Kick stuff? I don't know.
You're nitpicky right there.
Okay, I don't know. I like the big S. And also, if you click this link, have you seen this fucking ass on this guy? There's a photo. You have to look at this picture. He's got
What picture am I supposed to be looking at?
I want to see the super ass.
So I put the link in the blab right there. Look at that.
He's like Kim Kardashian.
What is he hiding in
Holy
that suit?
Shit.
Could that just be the angle? Is that, or is that?
I wonder how much he squats.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That is a crazy ass, dude.
Right?
Hey, so I see why he has the cape now.
Wow. Yes.
Wow.
To cover that big ass. Okay.
Holy shit.
But the last cool thing, so Teen Wolf Superman, it's a good TV Superman. Like, my question is, how are they going to use him? He is a supporting member in a show about Supergirl. Is he going to be – like we kind of know what he is from the first season where he's IMing her and he's all like big brother. But like is she going to overshadow him? Is he going to overshadow her?
Here's the real question. Is he going to overshadow the Superman we have on screen?
Yeah. Could this lead to his own spinoff TV show? Could he be so – like I'm so curious to see him deliver lines and act. But if you check out this tweet here, this girl filmed a little fight scene. He's fighting Metallo, and it's pretty fucking brutal looking, even just looking at the footage behind the scenes.
That's a stunt.
He's a stuntman, but look at the fighting style. Like, he's throwing the guy down, and he starts pounding on him, and he's kicking him while he's down. Like, there's some pretty brutal moves there against Metallo. It is Metallo.
That's a straight-up, like, side-of-the-hand axe handle smash that he's doing.
Right? That's like a street fight. But if it's Metallo is, he's powerful, so you got to fucking bring the heat. But I kind of like the way that guy looked. I don't know if that's Teen Wolf or a stuntman. It's probably a stuntman.
It's probably a stuntman. I think it's really interesting that when you look at it, like the way that that's shot, it looks like the S on his costume is entirely detached from the rest of it and is basically like a giant necklace.
It's like Flavor Flav's clock and shit. What the fuck is going on there? Good catch. I did not notice that.
Flavor Flav's clock.
He's got a Flavor Flav S. I'm curious to see. I mean, I think with Supergirl coming to CW, the tone will be more in line with the other shows that are kind of fun. And now he's in this, and we're seeing more of this. I really want to see how he acts in this.
It's so far, the fact that they show they have a fight scene already ruins what I wanted from it. I was really hoping that every two episodes or so on, like just in the middle of a storyline, he'd just swoop down and be like, hey, everything all right?
Yeah, and then he just leaves.
See you. And then just go.
All right, I gotta go. I'll catch you next time. Superman, I'm Superman. Bye. And he's got to announce he's Superman, of course, contractually.
By the way, I'm Superman.
By the leaves. Way.
I'm just wondering, is there any way he could be cooler than Henry Cavill?
Totally possible.
Because Henry Cavill hasn't set the bar
really depressing.
Yeah, Henry Cavill hasn't set the bar very high.
I'll tell you what, he's going to get more lines in two episodes than Cavill has had to say in two fucking movies.
Yeah, I think his text messages were more lines than Cavill had.
When Clark IM'd in that first season, you're like, this is the Superman I love. This is the character. From text messages, they got it way better than a fucking live action big budget movie.
I'll definitely have to get used to his look, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not used. That guy doesn't look like Superman. When I first saw that picture, I didn't think Superman. I thought Cuban guy.
Yeah, he looks Cuban. Why does he look?
Yeah, it's Cuban this. Pete? For some reason, he looks really tan in that picture, and not in anything else.
He just has like a 5 o'clock shadow,
like all the time. Like he can't get rid of it. That
he's like Superman 3 Superman.
Yeah, he's got a fucking he'll have to laser. Yeah, he's gonna laser it off with a fucking mirror. Okay, so last thing, guys, before we get to the killing joke, I want to share a Facebook post from legendary comic book artist Bill Sienkiewicz about an incident, an experience he had at San Diego Comic-Con. He writes, so 20th Century Fox was offering this Dazzler 12-inch album at SDCC in connection with X-Men Apocalypse digital release. I actually found out about this at the con when people started coming up to me in increasing frequency for signatures. This practice is hardly unusual, standard operating procedure for corporations. Even so, it still rankles. I'm one guy. I've been doing this comic book thing for years. I'm aware most everything is work made for hire. Still, I received no prior notification, a common courtesy, no thank you, ditto, no written credit in any form whatsoever, either on the piece or in connection with the premium, absolutely no compensation and no comp copies of the album. It's like two losing trifectas wrapped in an altogether indifferent fuck you. Boothmates Tizano DeSantis, Lauren Jett, and others nearby had to nearly physically restrain me from going to the Fox booth and making a scene where I would have taken it out on minimum wage booth sitters who had zero idea what this lunatic was pissed about. Am I overreacting here? Do I have the right, at least on behalf of fellow creators, to, at the very least, expect decent treatment and some kind of minuscule, even boilerplate acknowledgement? Asking that they part with a few coins, a few shekels, is insanely naive and hilarious, I know. Would be a nice gesture, though, and go a long way in soothing my mutant Polish artist rage. But seriously, is a thank you and a note of credit pushing it? I don't think so, but maybe I'm Stockholmed as to what passes as standard treatment of freelancers.
Oh, shit.
I was like, wow. And look, I've been on both sides of this as a freelancer and as a guy whose everything is work for hire. Delhauer, you dabbled. You're a freelancer. Ruggs, you know these people.
I know about art.
What do you guys think about this? Ruggs, you want to start?
I'm just an asshole over here.
Anthony, and then Anthony from point of view.
You fuck off and get something to eat for a while.
Okay, look. Okay, I apologize. That was wrong. Anthony, I'm actually going to start with you as the layman, not being outside of this
don't
completely.
Start with me.
Okay,
don't start.
All right. Fuck off. So,
I'm a man who has no idea what you're talking about.
Sometimes
talk to these two.
That could be interesting. Rod's comment.
Listen, artists get fucked all the time. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, no one puts value, especially on visual art, all right? Like, there's no value put on it. Same thing with, like, any of the theater arts, anything like that. Until you get to a certain level, you pretty much are getting it up the ass. Now, Bill Sienkiewicz,
he is at that level, arguably.
Now, you think that this guy put Marvel so many things on the map, New Mutants, posters,
galore,
book covers.
I mean, he's been working for decades.
Okay? Yeah! Like, Daredevil.
Yeah.
Like, just think about everything that he's done. All the posters that he sold. I remember I had like at least five.
Yeah, I had one.
Posters up in my room.
Arkham Asylum is amazing too. Yeah.
Okay. This motherfucker, give him some respect. He's not like some schmo that like did like a one shot and then disappeared. This guy's like a guy that anybody who collects comics knows.
Yep.
So when you get to that level, you're still getting fucked. I don't know. If I was him, I'd be pissed too. I would want to fucking punch somebody in the face.
That's shocking. Delhauer, freelance writer, you are, right?
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I had actually commented on the post itself a little bit, and I'll touch on what I had said was, last year I went to this small convention in New York, and I ran into Chris Claremont there and had him sign my copy of Days of Future Past. And as I was talking to him, I asked him, like, you know, did you see the movie? He goes, yeah, I saw it. And I asked him, you know, well, what did you think of it? He goes, well, I really wish that they had, you know, put mine and John's name on it for having created the comic.
Oh, shit.
Damn.
Apparently
no credit to John Byrne or Chris Claremont.
They have cameo appearances as like part of the president's cabinet or something like that during the movie, but there is no based on the comic by or anything like that.
They're in the movie. I don't know.
They apparently make a cameo, and he even said, he's like, yeah, I showed up for one day of filming. They threw me like, you know, a couple of bucks and basically sent me on my way. Like, there's no thank you. There's no, you know, this is your story. It was just, bye.
You get $120.
Yeah.
That's what they got.
God,
that's
damn
what they get.
So, and the problem is that it's a little bit different with the artwork because it's legitimately what he made being in the movie and being like handed out to convention goers. It's not like, you know, while Chris Claremont didn't get a thank you, and apparently this is just how Fox operates, is we do what we do, and if you were involved, great, whatever. Thanks for letting us do it, but we're not going to say anything. It's apparently a thing that Fox does rather often. And the problem is because it's work for hire stuff.
Yes.
Once you are done with it, it's not your property anymore. It now belongs to Marvel. It now belongs to whoever.
It's not illegal. And it's just shitty.
You want to know what the problem is? Is that model is really not good. And they should change the model because the only alternative that you have from work for hire a lot of times is you have to draft up a contract and go back and forth.
Yeah.
And then there's always a stipulation that you're going to get fucked on. So they needed to change like the business model. They need to say, okay, it's work for hire, but if it becomes like a major thing that's grossing X amount of dollars, that you get a royalty, just like with an actor or something.
And that's the worst part is that because work for hire is how so many people get into whatever the business is.
Yep.
Say, you know, you get put on a work for hire for the first thing ever, and, you know, your contract says, like, all right, your work for hire, whatever you make, we now own, so on and so forth. It is up to the creator to then fight to have in the contract that, okay, well, once, you know, if it winds up being this popular or whatever, I get money off of it.
And sometimes you don't want to risk that.
You don't have the kind of clout to be able to pull that.
Yeah.
What about credit? At least you can put your name on it and use that to leverage more business.
Well,
I think the problem is
it's
a mix. It's going in that gray area between movie based on comic book. Mm-hmm. That because it, like, number one, I guarantee you the reason that his name wasn't on anything in that movie is because the scene in which that like album cover shows up got cut from the film anyway.
But in this case, had they just put his credit on the artwork, it would have sold even more. Like, it would have made it more legitimate because he is a well-known comic book legend. I mean,
but here's the thing though about that argument, Imran, is you guys have been bashing on San Diego Comic-Con for a while. It's not just the hardcore fan that goes to San Diego Comic-Con anymore. Right. It's very casual fans that are filling that place up as well. They don't give a shit who the fuck the artist is. They're just looking at, oh, this is a cool thing. But Bill Sienkiewicz means nothing to half of them.
It doesn't hurt them to print in small letters in the fucking corner, art by Bill Sienkiewicz. Look, we're living in a day where 75 years it took for Bill Finger to get fucking credit for Batman along with Bob Kane. You know, so I work in an in-house creative department where everything, and I do illustrations, all my designs, I can't put my name on it. I don't own any of it. It could be used for whatever. So I understand that side. But as a freelance illustrator, you want, just give me some credit or a thank you or something.
You know what? It would change that is if all the artists or whatever banded together and did something about it, like created some sort of – is there like a union or anything for them? No. If there's not – and here's probably why there isn't, if there isn't, is because there's always someone that's going to do it for the terms that – the studio sets it at.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's the reason why it's the way into the business.
Yeah. Right.
Is because if
there's always
so
someone that you can get cheaper,
you don't want to do it. Right. We'll just, you know, we'll have the kid over here who's so hungry to get into the industry do it for us.
Yeah. You have like set designers unions, you have actors unions, and you do have some creative unions, but like they're not as
strong.
Not only that, but they don't just use them. They don't use all union people to do illustrations and stuff. Like, Marvel can't do you. There's no union for Marvel.
Well, you know? And the thing is, the piece they used, Sienkiewicz did it in 1983. Like, they've had it. It's been there.
But yeah. Then that's also the problem. It's been around for so long that
it's iconic.
It was made before even people were probably thinking about
it. And
this
stupid millennials.
I was
going to
say, it's
the
same problem with, you know, them giving Claremont credit for Days of Future Past. It was the 80s.
It was
like,
the 80s.
You know, this was one of the first big books he'd been working on.
And then people,
but here's the thing. I hear you bringing up the millennials, stupid like millennials.
Well, they thought it was Taylor Swift the thing. That's all I was saying.
That's not where I thought you were going with it. But if you're like, let's say it's like you, Imran, like, let's say this union was trying to be formed where, you know, we need to take back some ownership of these properties and at least get credit or whatever. But like, let's say you're up and coming and they're going to Bill Sienkiewicz and they're like, he's like making this fight. They go to you. Are you going to be like, nah, you know what? I'm going to stick with Bill Sienkiewicz and not do this. You know, like, it's never going to be, I don't think it'll ever be there. Yeah. I don't think it'll ever turn the way that you guys want it to do.
No, it's not going to happen.
It's just you need ethical people.
You should just do the right thing.
Exactly. And nobody, like, we see that less and less, the right thing actually being done, to the point where you don't even expect the right thing to be done at all.
Do you think that Fox, maybe some exec at Fox just saw that artwork?
Yeah.
Didn't know that Bill Sienkiewicz even did it?
Probably.
Oh, I guarantee it.
Yeah. Threw it
I
out
guarantee
there. Yeah.
It was I like, guarantee it, you, someone probably Google searched Dazzler.
Yep. Actually, I think it says in one article, if you Google search Dazzler, it's like the first thing that comes up. And the whole fucking stupid scene wasn't even in the movie. I would have loved to have seen that scene. I would have loved to have seen any more interaction with those kids than what they
showed. I would have loved to have seen them develop characters.
Yes.
It seems like Fox sometimes, instead of being willfully spiteful, is just being ignorant.
It's either ignorant or lazy. There was probably some fucking intern to grab the fucking image. I think he even said it wasn't at the right resolution. It was all fucking fucked up. And they were selling it too. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's fucked up. Ugh. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, it's in the end, it's fucked up. He has a right to feel mad about it. But it's also in a system that, truthfully, if he went over and started screaming about it, what's he going to do? What's he going to get from this?
So, listener, when you're at the cons, just be aware. I have another link to a video I will put in the show notes of a guy calling a dude out for selling. He kind of took iconic drawings, put them in Photoshop, added some splatters, printed them out, and he's like selling prints of it. You can watch, and the guy calls him out, and his kid is there, and he's like, oh, that's that. That's Brian Hitch. This is this. What do you got to say for yourself? And the guy's like,
I mean, that happens with just art in general, right? Art.
It's
literature.
All over the internet.
Oh, yeah. Everybody gets
there. The company Ripped Apparel, I've put some submissions into for doing like t-shirt art. Yeah. And they have a Facebook group that I'm on, and maybe it's got to be at least once a month. Somebody will put a post up that's like, hey, look, a bunch of artwork from the website was stolen by people and put over onto this site. Go and check and see if your stuff is on there.
Mm.
It just
shows that studios are not above it, though.
Yeah, you would think they would be, but they're not. Protect your work, people. Patent pending.
You can't do it.
I know. Not in this digital world. I mean, I like how, you know, you put a watermark on stuff. You notice John Belotti, when he posts stuff, he has a big watermark on top of it. Now,
but even at the days of Photoshop, you can just Photoshop.
If someone
the
really wanted to spend the time, I mean, Belotti, no offense, I could remove that watermark. I'm just saying, it's possible.
Okay, check this out. So ahead, when I was a kid, I used to look at, let's say, Jim Lee.
Yeah,
and I would copy a Magneto or something that he drew right out of his thing and put it in my sketchbook, and then I would hang it up and be like, I'm a great artist.
Yeah.
At a certain point, I was like, that's not me. I'm just copying another dude. It's not even like my characters or anything. So I was like, when does it become yours? It's crazy.
I did the same thing, Ruggs. I did the same thing. I had him on my wall, but that is also how you learn. You're starting out, when you're young, and then eventually you should
be selling that shit.
No, of course not. Eventually you move on to like, yeah, but that doing that made me like, okay, I'm going to compose my own thing. You know, it's still at a very young age. So
I think what it is you have a lot of, there's like this gradual move. You can start off like copying other people's stuff, 'cause you're getting yourself used to the concept of putting the drawing together. But it's once you start then making the changes, like, all right, I'm going to draw this, the same like position that he has for this person, but it'll be a different character doing it, and then boom, now it's like any other kind of art these days. It's really just taking the stuff you like and just putting them together, and it's now at least original enough that you can call it your own.
But you gotta add yourself, you gotta learn the rules before you can break it, and
there's a lot of people who swipe stuff.
Swipers everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
But if you credit the swipe, does that make up for it?
Yes, I think so. Because at least
I would say so.
You're at least making someone aware that that somebody came before you and
that's,
did it.
You know, you're right.
Yeah, imitation is the finest form of flattery unless you pretend like you did it yourself.
Yeah, and that's that video that's in the show notes that I put. In the case of that video, if that guy just put in the corner, I swiped this stuff to put this composition together in Photoshop, it probably wouldn't have been a problem.
He wouldn't be able to sell it.
Return to the Wild says, hugs to Rug Boy. Very good. He wouldn't have been able to say it. All right, guys, that's it for the news. Let's get to the meat and potatoes.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
It's not just any day. It's Mr. Throwback Thursday.
Hey, this is James.
And this is Bill, and we are the Mr. Throwback Thursday podcast.
Do you remember when the wheels were steel and the beats were real?
We do, and we talk about it every Thursday.
You can check out Woo News, One and Done, Record of the Week, and a whole lot more.
That's Mr. Throwback Thursday, keeping it classic on iTunes, Stitcher, and at highvoltageradio.com.
And always remember, new school stale, old school fresh.
Are you afraid of what goes bump in the night?
Have you or your friends ever pondered a conspiracy?
Do you want to know more about the unknown?
If so, then put on your tinfoil hat, sit down, and pick up your computer, tablet, or phone. Go to iTunes or YouTube and search for Secret Transmission Podcast and listen to us try to explain the unexplainable.
Follow us on Twitter for updates on shows.
At Secret Trans Pod. That's SecretTransPod.
Or you can email us suggestions
at secrettransmission@hotmail.com. That's SecretTransmission@hotmail.com.
Hey, what's up? It's Taylor Gray, the voice of Ezra Bridger on Star Wars Rebels, and you're listening to the Jock and Nerd Podcasts.
Jock and Nerd.
Of course, I gotta press this button.
Strap yourselves in, you fucks. Spoiler time.
Because if you haven't seen it, we're going to spoil the fuck out of DC's latest animated feature, Batman the Killing Joke, the movie.
Everybody dies.
Everybody should fucking die. It's shocking and puzzling. So this is the first animated movie that Fathom Events put on a big deal. They had two showings on Monday night. Then they increased the theaters. Then they added a second day. This movie made $3.1 million on a Monday night, and it made some more change to end up at $3.7 million for not bad. For
I was one of those.
You and Delhauer, you saw it at the theater. That's awesome. What was that experience like before you watched the movie?
And the crowd too. Yeah. What was everything like?
Well, the crowd is exactly what you thought. It's your standard neckbeard crowd, which I am perfectly at home in.
I'm one of those too.
But it was, you had everyone who was between the ages of like I'd say 19 and like 40. All there nice. Because they wanted to see it. And it was really interesting because when you get into the theater, everyone's, they're sitting there and they're talking. They're all, decked out in their comic book t-shirts. But they weren't running any kind of trailers or anything. Mm. The thing started when it officially started, it was about 5-minute documentary talking to Mark Hamill about his career as the Joker and returning for this movie. And then they got into the movie, and then they did a documentary at the end of it that was about 5 or 10 minutes that was all about, like, the music and, like, building the musical number and everything that was in it.
That's pretty
so
cool.
So it was really cool to see a lot of the ancillary stuff that they put in with it as well.
Cool.
Cosplayers?
There was a showing after mine. One dude showed up dressed as the Joker, was online for that. Other than that, nothing that I saw.
I mean, this is because this is like if you're going to see this, you are, you're one of us. You are a nerd. That's the only people who are going to go see this. Hopefully, I like this idea because I think Fathom doesn't usually do like new movies like this. They like show old stuff or they have these events occasionally. But
they'll do UFC stuff too.
Oh, they do. This was the biggest
night at the Metropolitan.
Okay, I think this was a huge like they're one of their biggest events. Yet. So we could see the next movies coming out possibly do this also, which would be fun. Now,
it's depending. I think it's going to be the right storyline. I think the reason they did it is because Killing Joke is such an iconic story.
Okay.
I would not have been surprised if they did Dark Knight Returns. I don't know if they did.
Killing Joke is
on that level, like a Watchmen, like something like that.
That's
is
a good point. That's a good point, because the next one is Justice League Dark, which I don't think it would pull.
That's
Batman.
Not.
Will in no way get a Fathom event. Absolutely
but it's got not. Matt Ryan. It's Constantine in it. Killing Joke the movie is 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, so already better than Suicide Squad, maybe.
It's about where it should be.
Should we start with this? We need a recap real quick for people maybe haven't seen the movie. Dellhauer, you do great.
If only you had someone who's done recaps on your show before.
If only we had someone who's been on a series called What the Fuck Happened to These Movies?
Well, that actually remembers the recaps, because sometimes we have Rugboy do it, and then he forgets midway through what happened in the story.
What happened? What are we talking about?
I want the patented Ginger Geek recap to start us out. What do you say, Maddie?
Sure. We'll give it its own little mini What the Fuck Happened for Blab.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so... fade in, and the movie, like, it's only about an hour and 30, mm-hmm. hour and 45 minutes long, so it's not the longest.
117, I believe.
Yeah. 117, okay, so I'm completely fucked with that.
Yeah. Good start. Okay, let's go.
Good start.
we're already roaring. The first part of the movie, for those who may have thought that this was just going to be entirely a retelling of the Killing Joke, you would be wrong. The first about 45 minutes follows a story with Batgirl, and it is her and Batman trying to track down a criminal whose name is Paris Franz.
Lame.
The worst.
Francisco is his full name, but of course, because it's DC, yeah. He goes by the nickname of Paris Franz.
Classic shitty DC name, yes.
Who is a somewhat sociopathic young gangster in the organized crime world. He tries to steal a armored car from wherever by putting it into a semi and driving around Gotham in it, because apparently speeding through Gotham in semis is a common occurrence.
No one's going to notice.
Where Batman and Batgirl go chasing him down. They stop them. They get the car back. Paris gets away with one of his goons, but they get everybody else. Immediately, they basically build this idea that Batman is in no way against just torturing the fuck out of a guy for information.
That's right.
I like that.
I love that line. He goes, "I'm gonna need some alone time," and then he just hear the guy screaming.
Then hear the guy screaming.
Yeah. Sitting there, just starts screaming no.
She's like, "Oh, okay," and just walks away.
So apparently, Paris has developed an obsession with Batgirl. And now wants to toy with her. So he starts like sending her messages and making it so that she has to come track him down. She winds up chasing him down when he makes another play to steal a bunch of money from his uncle, who is the head of their crime family, because he's decided that his uncle's time is up and he needs to take over. She doesn't thwart him there. He gets very date rapey.
Yeah.
By they get into a fist fight, and then he just sprays her in the face with apparently some sort of knockout gas. That, I'm assuming he probably got from Romania. If Rugboy's story pans out,
yeah. Did you see any of that there, Bugs?
they spray it
on their salads in Romania. That's what I heard.
She locks herself in the vault there, so he can't do anything to her. And then we fast forward, and she's sitting there. I think one of my favorite moments from the movie is when she's sitting there watching the cops like going over the crime scene, and Batman arrives. And he just arrives with a cup of coffee in his hand.
Oh yeah, that's right.
At first I thought it was like, oh, so Batman just decided to get a cup of coffee before he stops by. But then he hands it to her. So it's like, oh, okay. So he's trying to be comforting.
He stopped at Starbucks like in his costume? Is that what happened?
In the full getup, just, I need a half frap mocha latte.
The Batmobile at a drive-through Starbucks would be fantastic.
Name should I put on it, sir?
just draw a bat symbol.
They are deciding that they need to try and track him down. He's leaving messages for Batgirl, and Batman's telling her she shouldn't get involved because she's getting too, too attached to doing this and whatever. Ultimately, it boils down to she goes to stop Paris. Doesn't really work out. Batman shows up, beats the crap out of a bunch of people to save her. She starts getting mad at him, thinking that he is underplaying her usefulness to mm-hmm. him, and he is basically just being Batman.
Mm-hmm.
At which point they wind up banging on a rooftop.
Oh,
I'm assuming out of just sexual frustration.
Well, you're forgetting that this whole time there's this side plot that I'm cutting to where she's talking to her gay best friend at the library.
Oh yes, where she's referring to Batman as being this guy she's seeing, yeah. and even goes so far as to claiming he's her yoga instructor.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just this whole thing to have her gay best friend be like, "Girl, you need to get some.
You close yeah. that deal."
So they wind up finally banging, and in. After that happens, she then is wondering why Batman is so emotionally distant from her. Because apparently that's something Batman has never done before.
That's never happened before.
And it just turns – the rest of it really kind of turns into like this high school drama of like, oh man, the guy I really like slept with me and now he won't talk to me and I don't think it was a good idea.
Yeah.
There's also another fight scene and some explosions in there, and Batman gives her a speech about facing the abyss of being a crime fighter. She finally catches Paris Franz, almost beats him to death, realizes that that is what the abyss Batman was talking about is.
She suddenly becomes Jason Todd, basically.
Yeah, a little bit.
And decides to quit.
I quit!
She feels that she is not cut out for this, which Batman told her she is not.
Yeah.
And she feels that she will be a liability if he has to, you know, try and protect her. So right. in order to make his life easier, she quit being Batgirl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we go to the second story of the movie, which is the entirety of Killing Joke. Yeah. So, I don't know if you want me to go through that.
No, you don't need to go through that. I feel like
everyone knows that story.
It's literally... I think that's a good point to stop just because I think we should almost review that first portion of the movie
because it's
added on and it's so different from the Killing Joke novel.
Totally, like everything.
It almost feels like a hyper-sexualized version of a Batman the Animated Series episode.
Yeah, they're so...
It's almost legitimately...
Paris Franz and all this shit. Like,
It has this weird, like... fan fiction based on Batman the Animated Series type of thing. We're just like some guy was like, I'm going to write the story where finally Batman bangs Batgirl.
Well, the thing is, like when Batman fucks Robin, he doesn't know their parents. You know, Batman knows the commissioner. That's his dude. Like that's
every
the
night
dude
he has
he
to
talks
stand
to
on
every
that
day.
Rooftop and just think in his head, don't bring up that I banged your daughter.
When he talks, don't bring up that I banged your daughter. Yeah, he can't fuck his daughter.
Batman fucks Robin,
the parents are dead. You know what I mean? There's no awkwardness.
We might as well just get into it. What do you guys think of the choice to have them banging? I mean, that is literally the plot of this whole thing, is them banging, the sexual tension.
I think what I find interesting, and this was pointed out to me, was that this apparently is a canon concept in Bruce Timm's universe.
Right.
In Batman Beyond,
there is a moment where Terry McGinnis is talking to Commissioner Barbara Gordon, and she mentions that they apparently had a sexual relationship at one point that didn't work out.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know if that would have went all the way. I think that maybe they could have kissed for a little bit, and then Batman would have like shoved her off, and like that would have like hurt her feelings. You know what I mean? And they didn't have to go all the way rooftop fucking.
I would have gone because Batman's kind of been the father figure for the Bat family, right? Patriarch.
Yep.
But she necessarily doesn't need a father figure because she has her father.
Yeah.
So I would have gone the route of maybe her kind of having this like kind of crush on him, but him always shutting that shit down. Like,
yes.
Him being very professional, like very, not professional, but very like, no, like you're basically my other daughter, like my daughter. Like I wouldn't have gone this hypersexual route that they
went. He's like her uncle. It's not a father. Yeah. He's like her uncle.
Honestly, it's weird is the fact that writers always seem to have this fixation with Batman just banging somebody while in costume.
Yeah, they did it with Catwoman at the beginning of the New 52.
And they did it with Huntress in...
Oh, yeah.
Was that Frank Miller's Batman and Robin that he did that?
Maybe. I don't remember.
I don't remember.
Anyway, there is constantly this desire to have Batman like put on the costume and be like, and now I'm going to get some pussy.
Like, yeah.
It never works out. I don't think they've ever had a story where he has had sex with somebody in costume, and I've been like, "This was a good story."
Yeah,
it's always weird. I also think they were trying. I mean, I know that what they were trying to give some sort of more of a meaningful connection between Barbara and Batman, because the Killing Joke on its own, if you're not a fan of the comics, you don't know who Barbara Gordon really is. You know, you don't know why he would really care for her all that much. But so they tried to give them this connection, but then it was like, well, it's the Killing Joke, so that storyline's turned up to 11. So let's turn up their connection to 11 and have it be this weird sexual thing. And I think it was firmly believe it was the wrong choice.
It's puzzling
it
and shocking.
Bother me that much, but yeah, now that you mention it,
it's not that it bothers me. It's just shocking.
Like, why? It doesn't make sense. Like, I understand, like you said, this book in later recent years has been the lady in the fridge trope. You know, the old, right. Is it sexist? Is it lazy writing? It's just to move the protagonist, male protagonist forward. But when I read the book when I was a kid and I reread it before, like, it's not about her. The book is about fucking Gordon and Joker and Batman. But in an attempt to rectify that, they managed to sexualize her even worse, which is so shocking. Like, this first half could have been a decent Batgirl movie itself had they not gone all crazy with that part. And it does not affect at all the second half of the movie. Well,
they completely changed the tone. You mentioned it being about Joker and his weird psychosis and Jim Gordon. But they made it so that it's now about her, because if you notice, she starts off narrating the film.
Yes, yes.
Right. And the tag at the end is her. So this film suddenly turns to her.
Yeah,
and they make these weird choices where she has still no agency.
She's telling us a story
about
where
the Killing
she's
Joke?
Not even present for like two-thirds of it.
Yes. It doesn't match. And I feel like they also turned Gordon a little bit into a victim, where in the book you get that this guy is not going to break, that he can put he's fighting Joker's torture, but now he's also kind of a victim.
How much is different from the book, do you think, besides the fact that they tagged
on
his,
they added a couple
things during the actual story.
I can tell you if you want to get to the second part. The adaptation so the adaptation part was very interesting. They added some dialogue in the very beginning, and they removed a couple of key line that I noticed. But for the most part,
Madness is the emergency exit.
No. For the most part, it's word for word. This is what I noticed, and this is my question to you. In the scene where Batman is visiting Barbara in the hospital after she gets shot, Bullock is there. In the book, Bullock says, "We found her in a state of undress. You didn't hear about that?" And Batman's like, "Really?" And then he says a line about there was also some lens caps there that didn't fit any camera in the apartment. Meaning, he took off her clothes and took pictures of her. In the movie, the lens cap line is not in there. And I think it's to imply that possibly she was raped. But I reread the book before. I never thought that Joker raped Barbara Gordon.
Me neither.
He shot her. He took off her clothes, humiliated her, and took photos. That was it. Because there's no need for Joker to rape her. That's not like his character. I don't think that's what he's into. He's that crazy. So I don't know why they left that line out about the lens caps. That was curious.
I'll throw in, though, that I initially, when I read the book a while ago, and I looked at it again after this, but I didn't think that he raped her. But if in this movie, you can see he unbuttons her dress or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Why are you doing this?" In the book, there's a panel of him touching that same button, unbuttoning it as well.
Yep.
So it could be interpreted that he might have raped
her. No, but then they reveal that there was photo. He had a camera, lens cap, photos.
Right. But
for a little while.
Various states of undress.
Because you find out, because that's how he's going to torture Gordon, right, is just the photos of her.
I'll agree. They more imply in this film that she was raping her, for sure.
I think it's been like a topic for a little while among a lot of fans, is the question, did Joker rape Barbara Gordon or not? And it's usually very divisive. A lot of people say like, "Oh yeah, absolutely." Or they'll say, "No, that's not him. That wouldn't make sense." And it's one of those things of, as a person who I find the character of the Joker fucking fascinating.
Yep.
Like, for how terrible of a person his character is supposed to be, I can't not, like, love reading him and love anything that he winds up being in. Part of the reason why I'm kind of nervous about Suicide Squad. But on back to what we were doing. It's one of those things that, like, for me, I think the reason I could never believe that he did that is because it's one of those moments where it's like, you have taken him to a point where now he can't ever be a likable villain again. And it's something that DC's done a lot. Like, when they want to make a villain unbelievably, like, despicable, you cannot possibly have a reason to defend this villain.
It's obvious.
They wind up being a rapist.
Yeah.
Like, they did it to Dr. Light in Identity Crisis.
Yes. Yep.
And like that was the biggest backlash.
But it's explicit. It's explicit in that case. In this case, like the end of the book and the movie, that it's ambiguous.
Yeah.
I think that they imply it more here specifically because of the fact that they have Batman have sex with her.
Yeah. Stupid.
Because now you're having this really twisted juxtaposition of her willingly having sex with Batman versus being raped by the Joker.
I would agree with that's a good point.
Yeah.
And it's to touch back on the sex thing for a moment, I think another reason as to why they probably added it in, outside of Brian Azzarello admitting that he did it for shock factor, was that there's a moment when he's in the Batcave looking over Joker's like previous profile, and they have all these different pictures, and one of the pictures they have is the bloodied and beaten body of Jason Todd.
Yeah.
Means that point, this is post Death in the Family, which means Batman has proven that killing one of the people he works with is not enough to kill the Joker. So just shooting Barbara Gordon and her just being one of the people he works with is not enough to potentially have Batman kill him at the end of this story.
I think the whole story, like, becoming canon also kind of ruins the story.
Well, here's my opinion.
Go ahead, Rogue Boy.
Okay, I don't want to step on you, Matt.
No, it's okay. That's fine.
But I'm not sure which came first. Like, was the Killing Joke or the Batman the Animated Series? I don't know which one
Killing
came
Joke
first.
Published 1988.
Killing Joke came out in the late 80s.
But yeah, so I'm going to say this. Like, my whole idea of the Joker was based on this comic book. Like, that whole Death in the Family and this and a few other things really, like, carved out the Joker. Who is the Joker for me? Okay. And, of course, you know, The Dark Knight Returns and some of the other stuff. But I feel like when the animated series came on, he was nowhere near as menacing. Like, those Brian Bolland drawings.
Yes.
And the way that that comic is, it's haunting.
It's right.
And no animation could ever hold a candle to it. As much as they tried to, it just didn't capture, like, that creepiness that's there. And then when they went to the animated series – and I know people are going to kill me for this, but I don't really like Mark Hamill as the Joker at all. Passable.
I
think they could have a million other people that do better. Like, but whatever. So,
are you attacking my childhood, Brad?
I just think that the menacing factor of the Joker, that kind of that real sense of dread in him, like that he could do anything. I feel like that the animated series, he's always under control. You know, in any kind of animated format, he's always been under control. Like, Batman is always – so it just didn't work for me, this animated movie. It didn't. I mean, even though it was the comic page for page, there was something completely lost for me. And I don't think it was that beginning part that did it. I don't think that was it. I think it was something in the translation of that story.
Along the line of what Rug Boy is saying, I think it definitely is the fact that the movie does – change a little bit in the fact that it's Hamill, it's Kevin Conroy, and it's Bruce Timm.
Yes.
Yeah, so now you're getting a lot of the animated series stuff put in there.
Because that is the young Y7 TV rating family-friendly Batman that everybody knows. Now, as much as I loved Mark Hamill reading the dialogue from the book, because the dialogue is great, I have to agree. I think it may have been better to pick completely new voice actors to make him, and not Bruce Timm, because you look at that and you think of Batman the Animated Series. This book needs to be a completely edgier, darker, a different voice for all of them to make it creepy, people we're not familiar with.
I think, honestly, I still think Hamill could have done exactly what we wanted. I think the problem was is that because he does fall so much onto repetition, he's done this for so long that it's basically he can fall into that voice in an instant and just do whatever he wants with it.
Yeah.
I think what Rugboy was talking about, and I really agree with, is there is a point when you start getting to the end of the book when Batman is finally coming after the Joker. And Joker is doing this whole bit where he's talking about, like, you know, do you know how, you know, how close we've come to World War III because of a flock of geese on a screen?
Yeah.
You know, I can see the funny side, but I don't know why you're not laughing. In the movie, you know, it's Mark Hamill doing the Joker. It sounds great. But the problem is that when you read it in the book, this is a point where a man who is legitimately crazy is starting to recognize that he can't understand something about life. And it is killing him.
Whereas in the movie, a fucking dance and singing scene breaks out and ruins the whole mood of the whole fucking thing.
It's in the book.
It is, it's but that's different read through your own head. Ultimately, look, I was really excited, and I agree, the adaptation part, it just kind of fell flat, and the whole thing just seems kind of unnecessary. I don't think this book was a good pick to adapt into an anime.
I think part of the issue is, I hate to say it because, again, it's also, since it's part of my childhood, he's always been my Batman, is I think Kevin Conroy kind of missed the mark on a lot of stuff with it. Mm. When it got to a point where he's legitimately reading the lines from the Killing Joke comic book, it starts to sound like he's just reading the comic book.
Because
the whole opening bit that where he's sitting in the cell and he's doing, you know, I've been doing a lot of thinking about you and me, on and so forth. It doesn't feel in any way like Batman talking to the Joker. It feels like Kevin Conroy reading the comic book to you.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things where it was just kind of disheartening because I always think Kevin Conroy's voice whenever I think of Batman. But to then almost feel like Kevin Conroy is maybe phoning in Batman is just like heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
You guys bring up a lot of interesting points that I didn't think of with, you know, with the Bruce Timm and Kevin Conroy, that contrast with this really dark storyline. I always thought the Killing Joke, I loved the Killing Joke reading the book back when I first read it. I think it's a great insight into the Joker's mind. It's a great insight into how strong Jim Gordon is as a character. The line where he's like, if I have, sometimes my past is like this, sometimes it's like this. If I prefer to have a past, I prefer to be multiple choice, something along those lines, just illuminates the craziness of like, the fact that he tells this storyline of how he had one bad day, but then is that really his fucking origin?
It's one of many that he's told over the years.
Right. But here's the thing about this book being adapted. It's just a fucking mean book.
Yeah.
And in this age where women are more powerful than ever, getting much more recognition, not being used as a trope, I just felt like I didn't like this adaptation. I don't know if I would have liked it if it was done correctly. Like, I just don't think there's much of a place for this adaptation in terms of animation anymore. Like, it doesn't seem right. It's a very mean book. Barbara Gordon has no agency whatsoever in this book. She's literally used as a prop. It doesn't further her. There's even the ending is very ambiguous. There's no real comeuppance for the Joker. It's just it's also mean.
But that's how the book is, but...
That's, yeah.
It doesn't...
I know that's how the book is.
Yeah,
but I don't think, even looking back on the book, watching this kind of made me think back to the book, and I'm like, man, this book is just a fucking mean book.
It's dark, dude, yeah.
Yeah, after I read The Killing Joke, I'm like, why isn't Batman just kill this guy once and for all? But he never killed him for killing Robin.
No.
You know, it's like he never killed anybody, so it's just really frustrating.
I am of the camp that because Alan Moore meant for Killing Joke to be a one-and-done story, that he does kill Joker at the end of that.
See, I wanted to bring up the controversial ending. Okay, Delhauer, you think he kills him at the end. I didn't like the way this movie ended. It's not how I pictured it in my head when I read the book. Because you hear Batman laugh, and it's really creepy, along with Mark Hamill.
Again, it's because Kevin Conroy doesn't seem to know how to make a laugh as Batman sound in any way recognizable.
It sounds forced. But in the book, you hear laughter, and you hear a siren. And the siren gets louder, and the laughter in my head always was the Joker's laughter, and you see him grab him, and then the laughter stops. And the siren continues. This had no siren. This one instead, Joker stopped laughing. And Batman laughing was the last thing you heard, which is just weird. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the problem I have is, and again, this all ties into the extra story with Barbara Gordon in it, is that is where Batman, that's where the Killing Joke's supposed to end. You're not supposed to have an idea of what happens after this. So to then cut to her, like, you know, wheeling into her apartment in her wheelchair, talking to her dad on the phone, and now I have to go be Oracle. Immediately, it's like, okay, so that means nothing really has changed. Like, there's no way Batman killed the Joker, because all anyone would be talking about is the fact that Batman killed the Joker and probably got arrested for it. Jim Gordon told him by the book, and he didn't do it.
Yeah,
and also saying Gordon's fine. He's back to work and doing whatever. Like, if there's anybody, like, yes, Barbara Gordon got shot and potentially raped, but if there's anybody that really you want to know, are they okay? It's Jim Gordon, because that is psychological fucking torture.
Yeah. And he withstood it. But overall, dude, I'm disappointed. It seemed unnecessary. It was flat. And I just think it was a bad pick to, first of all. And I like the book better working outside of canon as just this example of the quintessential Joker Batman story.
I don't mind it being outside of canon, because I think it adds a lot to Joker. But I just think it always, the adding on of the sex scene and that whole forced storyline is very weird. And you guys bring up the points about
that, especially for the fact that there's absolutely nothing to do with the Joker in the first half of that movie.
Right.
Like, what do we give a shit about Paris Franz and his obsession with Batgirl? That's going to carry no weight in the second half of this movie. Only way it would have tied in and I would have cared would have been if, when Batman went to go visit Joker's cell, it's Paris Franz all painted up like the Joker and forced to sit
there. Oh, that would have made more fucking sense. Why didn't they do that?
Even the adding on to the first, like I said, the storyline's mean already. But then that first, adding on this new kind of like Barbara Gordon, Paris Franz thing, it's another like mean sort of dark story that you've lopped in there with Paris Franz being this kind of rapey psycho guy. And then the fact that Batman basically uses a woman in like one of the worst ways besides rape. He just uses her to have sex, then doesn't talk to her after. So like, it's just questionable.
It's so shocking and puzzling.
He uses her to have sex and then convinces her to get out of his life.
And then
he gaslights the fuck out of her.
Like, literally, the whole thing is just dark on top of dark. It reminds me of like those 70s exploitation films that were like just fucking brutal, just to be brutal.
Spit on your grave.
Yeah,
I understand that, but that shit actually happens, you know. That I mean, right. Not to that extent, but people do fuck and then they don't call each other, and people do you know, have like stalkers on Facebook and shit. Like, people are stalking. There's all kinds of shit happening, and you know, just because you acknowledge it doesn't make it necessarily mean. But I do get what you're saying, though, that to have it all in one movie that
all in one
gonna watch is probably not the best idea.
All in one with what you brought up, I believe it was you, Rugboy, adding on Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill and the Bruce Timm aspect of it, which is very childlike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's such a weird mixture of things.
It just didn't work.
Not work, unfortunately. How much do we blame Azzarello? Did you hear about what he said? The Guardian reported that writer Brian Azzarello called the fan a pussy after they said that Batgirl can only control the men in her life through sex rather than any real agency. The entire event was an unmitigated disaster, and it's likely that the Killing Joke will continue to fall for esteem in the years to come.
Have you read Brian Azzarello's Joker storyline?
The graphic novel one?
Yeah, I think it was him.
I have that.
That was him. I mean, that's another very dark book.
Yeah.
In line of what he's wrote for this.
The way I've always, I was saying to somebody the other day, the way I've always described Brian Azzarello's writing is he has these great pitch ideas that he never actually makes something worthwhile out of.
Mm.
Because he wrote Batman Noel. It's a Christmas Carol with Batman as the ghosts.
Yeah.
And then there's that Joker one, which legitimately is, it's Training Day if Joker was Denzel Washington's character.
Yeah. Right.
He did 100 Bullets too, which I really liked 100 Bullets from Image, I think it is.
I can't speak to that one though. But so since I didn't write it or didn't read it, I won't trash it because I haven't read it.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, it's like you're talking about the Joker. And supposedly Batman's worst enemy, you know, the biggest scumbag on the earth. Like, how far can you go with him? Do you think that there's an end, like, that he shouldn't go to? Like, you know, talk about rape and stuff. Like, what would the Joker not do? Like, what do you think? Like, how far?
I mean, that's a good question.
I do truly think that my aversion to the idea that Joker won't rape really is just it's a fanboyism. Like, oh, I like the character, so I can't ever accept the idea that he would do this.
What is?
And you're right. Like, there really has been no end. Going back to Azzarello's Joker graphic novel, he skins a man alive in that.
Yep.
Just for the fuck of it,
yikes.
I think.
Yikes. That's a Joker. I mean, Joker cut his face off.
Yeah,
also,
he's got the Glasgow smile in there too.
Yeah, it's legitimately. I think the Azzarello's Joker is supposed to be like a sequel in sense to like the Heath Ledger Joker right. character.
Ah, yeah, yeah. Maybe. And it looked a lot like him too. I feel like the artist modeled a lot of it after him.
Well, yeah. To Rugboy's question, what would I not want the Joker doing? I mean,
what line?
I don't know. I mean, he is the epitome. I've always enjoyed him being the epitome of chaos and looking at this world and just laughing like, the fuck are you guys taking this so seriously for? This is all a joke. Mm-hmm. Anything can happen. We're all going to fucking die at any moment. Let's just fucking live it up. So I've always been like agent of chaos. I like that. Yep. I like the multiple paths. I don't know. I feel for whatever reason didn't work in this.
I feel like that Joker when he came into existence, you know, he found this kind of like attitude where he doesn't give a fuck. He's going to do everything his way and, you know, whatever. But then when he started focusing on Batman and making like torturing him, like, that's his major goal in life, is to fuck with him as many ways as possible. Like, that's the gravy of his life. That's like his going to a vacation. Like, okay, what am I going to do this summer? How am I going to fuck with Batman this summer? And, like, that's what he kind of plans his life around in some ways. You know, when he's not trying to make enough money to or steal enough shit to, like, get by, you know?
Yeah. There is the third mostly unrecognized game in the Arkham series, Arkham Origins, touches on a concept like that at one point. So when they first introduce the character of the Joker, while he kind of looks like the Joker, he's really, it's more like Heath Ledger's Joker. Yeah. He's pretending to be Black Mask and he's just kind of fucking things up because it's what he knows to do. Like, you look like a clown and you're psychotically evil. You might as well just do what you can to cause problems. It's supposed to be his first interaction with Batman. And towards the end of it, he winds up jumping off of a building because in his mind, there's, you know, what the hell's the point of, you know, not killing yourself? It's just that everything is for a gag. And Batman saves him. And Joker doesn't know how to handle the idea that Batman would save his life. And this suddenly creates this whole entire obsession where he is suddenly coming to realize that, like, he has a purpose in life now. And his purpose is Batman. And it becomes this twisted romance, basically, of like, you ever had someone come into your life that you can't imagine yourself ever existing without?
That Snyder had that recent storyline with the Joker.
Yeah.
The end game where Batman reads his eye pupils and notices that his eyes are moving because he actually loves Batman.
Yeah. was great.
But he doesn't care who Batman is. Once he finds out that Batman is Bruce Wayne, he's almost like, fuck, he's a person now. I don't care.
It's irrelevant. Yeah, it ruins
the point. The idea of Batman.
Batman even says to him, he's like, you've had multiple points where you could have gotten into the Batcave and found out who I am, but you won't do it because you won't let yourself.
He doesn't want to end the game. And I like the Joker and Batman kind of being two sides of the same coin.
It's both of them having one bad day.
Yeah, which is why I love
one went one way and one went the other.
One decision away from being that other person.
I've always enjoyed Batman being like a degree away from being one of the villains in Arkham. Like,
well, I think that's what the Joker's plan is.
Yeah.
Right.
To show
him. He wants to make Batman like him. He wants to see if he can break him. Yeah, I think Batman's secret thing is that he wants to see if he could get the Joker to cut the shit.
Well, he says that, and I love it where he says that in the book. He goes, why can't you see how funny everything is? Why can't you see the joke? And Batman's like, because I already heard it before, or I heard it the first time, and it wasn't funny.
It wasn't funny the first time.
Well, that would have been interesting to explore in this movie. I don't know how they would have been able to do it, but the fact that they added in the sex scene and the over-implication of rape totally overshadows the entire conversation we just had.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
It ruined it.
That's in the book. Yes, that is honestly supposed to be the entire point of Killing Joke, is that Joker's trying to prove to everyone, and mostly prove to himself, that one bad day can turn anybody into the Joker. And Batman's plan is to show him that's not true. One bad day only turned you into the Joker because you couldn't handle it.
It
turned me into Batman because I'm better than you.
I love it, because when he tells him, oh, by the way, Gordon wanted this by the book, he didn't crack. So maybe it's just you, Joker. And I think it's great.
The one thing they added into the movie that honestly I think was pretty brilliant is that scene just before the end when they're finally getting into their fist fight in the upside down room.
Yeah.
Did any of you recognize that the upside down room was the kitchen of his apartment when he was with his wife?
Oh, in the flashbacks, he flipped it. That was added. I was like, when they did that fight scene, I forgot. I was like, wait, this isn't, what is this part? This is not in the book. The dialogue's there. It's different.
Well, so are we all in agreement that we were disappointed? Is that what we're all saying?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Lame. You want to give a numeric value to this on a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
That always helps.
I kind of agree with the Rotten Tomatoes rating of a 5, like, but I'd actually go maybe a little lower, like a 4.
Mm. Whoa.
I give it a 5.
I'd say 4 out of 10.
Yeah.
5. What about you?
I'll go straight into the 5.5.
Oh.
But.
Well, look.
Out of 10.
Yeah. 5.5.
It's all, I mean, like I said, it's also personal. It's a lot of personal feelings that I got from it. That's just like, this is not how I'm used to modern comics anymore with the way they portray women.
Like all DC Warner Brothers movies that are being released this year, it spans the fucking whole strata of people loving it. Let me share a positive review from listener Daniel Nosker. Speak pipe.
Hey guys, Daniel Nosker just got out of the Killing Joke movie. I thought they did a great job following the storyline. Obviously, there's a little bit of stuff they added, such as in the beginning, you get the backstory with Batgirl and her relationship with Batman and the sex scene that everybody threw a fit about, which I don't see what the big deal was. It kind of made the story a little more compelling towards the end when Batman went after the Joker. There was also some really cool parts where he pulled up all these images of the Joker in the Batcave when he was talking to Alfred, and you could see different pictures such as the Dark Knight Heath Ledger Joker and the Cesar Romero Joker. I thought that was pretty cool. It ended pretty much how the book did. I really don't have any complaints. I thought they did a great job. The cast did awesome. Definitely go check it out.
He also saw it in the theater. So I did enjoy the all the different Jokers on the screen.
I thought that was pretty interesting. It's a nice Easter egg.
Yeah, because in the book, he's looking at like an old 60s drawing with like Batmite, like an old Dick Sprang pinup of all the Bat characters. And then the Jokers are also old Jokers. You see the old Jokers, so.
I will also say, despite the fact that I know Imran said he was not a fan of it, I did enjoy the musical number. I actually got it stuck in my head for a little while.
Well, can you sing us a little? How does it go? I forgot. Oh, loony.
I go loony. I don't remember. It really just this juxtaposition that I think works for the character, at least, of going into this big Broadway-style number while he's making a man look at pictures of his naked, bloodied daughter laying on a floor.
Definitely the joke. It works better on the page, though, and you singing it in your head than actually
hearing. Honestly, I don't think so.
No?
I think having – because with them making it into a song and they made it into such like this big, you know, showstopper number.
Yeah.
At least for me, that's what I always thought it was anyway, because that's all the Joker is he's theatrics.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say that they definitely had to add something to this movie.
Yeah.
Because if they just do the straight Killing Joke, that movie is about 20 minutes.
That's true. That's what everyone had said, was they weren't going to get the money to make a 45-minute movie.
Right. They needed to add something. It's just what they added, along with the Killing Joke storyline on its own, just made for a very depressing movie, in my opinion.
Huh. I always figured the movie was going to be depressing. Right. The problem was the first half of it was depressing for a completely different reason.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
It's puzzling, shocking, unnecessary, all those words.
Go ahead, Ruggs.
I just think they should have just gotten a different guy to voice the Joker. I mean, Batman's passable in this movie.
Yeah.
Because it's just Batman. He's like this flat thing that doesn't really exist.
I would have replaced both of them. I would have liked to see both of them different actors.
I honestly wouldn't have minded to see both of them with different voices as well. I love Mark Hamill, but, you know, other people have done a good job before.
See, the thing is, like with Batman, when they did The Dark Knight, they got RoboCop to be the voice, and I hated that. I would have preferred Kevin Conroy.
No, I like Peter Weller in Dark Knight Returns.
I feel like he was just reading the lines.
But
at least it wasn't Ben McKenzie.
Yeah.
Did anyone see Batman Year One?
That was Ben McKenzie?
Yeah, I saw that.
That was Ben McKenzie as Bruce Wayne.
Oh, I don't remember the Batman.
Talk about reading your lines into a microphone.
He kind of does that on Gotham too, though.
You know, this book is probably the last of the really weird, like really big controversial storylines that they could adapt. I mean, the only one I can think of is either Identity Crisis or when Kyle Rayner's girlfriend gets shoved in the fridge, the actual refrigerator.
The actual girl in the fridge.
That's a good point, Anthony. Here's what's coming up for next year for the animated films. Like I said before, they're going to do Justice League Dark, Matt Ryan playing Constantine. Then they're going to do something called Teen Titans Judas Contract, which is a sequel to their Justice League versus Teen Titans, and it adapts a comic arc from 1984 of the same name. And then Bruce Timm is doing an original Batman and Harley Quinn movie, which that may work better now that it's original. And they probably will.
Why not?
Just fucking do it again. Although,
I was going to say, because apparently both of those characters bang everybody anyway.
Yeah. Why was this rated R, though? Was it from, I mean, I saw a severed hand. I think I saw a severed head. You saw a bra. I don't know if it
did. There was swearing. You had heavy implications.
Nobody said fuck. There was one shit. I was keeping track.
I think part of it is that it's when you go for the MPAA rating, when it comes to things like disturbing material like upsetting content, they'll give it an R.
DC was probably aiming for an R. Let's be honest. This is the Killing Joke.
This is like the barely. This is a barely R, lightest R
you could get. But they want it. You almost at that point want the R because it's going to create more publicity for your movie.
Absolutely. You can't do a PG-13 Killing Joke would have been.
If you said it's a PG-13 version of the Killing Joke, everyone would go, oh, well, that's going to be terrible, despite the fact that PG-13 is really just light R these days.
But yeah, it is. So
there's no tits and they'll say fuck once.
You are right. Like PG-13 to this R, pretty much the same thing. All right, guys. Good review. I think we got it all out there. Everything I wanted to get out, I definitely said, let's move on to the next.
We're going
to
get accused of agreeing too much again.
Yeah, but the
I tried my hardest to put some things that I liked about it.
The proof is in the cell animation. Let's move on.
Doc and Nerd
Jock and Nerd. Since we had Maddie Delhauer here, I wanted to do a quick recommendation / what are we geeking out about these days segment for all of us. Who would like to volunteer to go first? Anthony? You go.
Anthony
caught it. Dibs. He had
that
dibs.
That kid who always volunteered in class too.
Hell yeah!
Oh, you fucking
pet over
Who's
here.
Who's the nerd? I thought I was the nerd.
Bro, do you even podcast?
Okay.
There you go. we talked about this on the Patreon only episode.
With Andrew Gildy. Definitely check.
But
out.
I fully caught up. It's only 4 episodes in, but The Night Of is fucking riveting, dude.
On HBO. Yeah, on HBO.
You guys familiar with The Night Of? Ruggs?
No. Matt? What is it?
Give him the setup. It's really good. I love this show.
This isn't this is kind
of
spoiling.
No. You can give him the first half of the first episode setup without and then just go from there. Just like Andrew pitched us. Yeah.
Pakistani kid in New York. I believe it might be Brooklyn. I'm not sure. Tutoring black kids. Never really had any pussy or anything. Gets invited to a party. Steals his dad's cab. Girl gets in cab thinking it's a real cab. It's not a cab. girl is batshit insane. But,
but like a fun, sexy,
fun, like a fun, sexy. I'm
cute as shit.
Drugs with you.
Yeah.
The line where she gives him cocaine and goes, "This is the party you've missed your entire life."
That's great.
Basically, he does drugs, drinks for the first time, has sex, and falls asleep. 2 hours later, whatever, wakes up
in the kitchen.
Wakes up, yeah, in the kitchen of her place.
Yeah.
Goes upstairs. Girl is violently mutilated.
Oh, there's shit.
Dead, stabbed, blood everywhere.
There's the premise.
And that's all we want to say. That's like, that is not even the whole first episode.
No, that, and it goes, yeah, total, it's gone ways I didn't think it was going.
And did you notice, I felt like I saw it's produced by James Gandolfini?
Oh, really? Wow.
It said, I'm going to look this up.
I think that there is talk of something he wanted to produce getting put together before he died.
This must be it. It's got a great cast, a lot of like Pakistani.
Very good cinematography.
Oh, it's shot great.
Touches upon the corruptness of police, of how the lawyers work with police, jail.
It's a recent
bias against being Muslim.
Yeah, everything, dude. It's got a little bit of People versus OJ. It's got a little bit of Serial podcast. It's got a great John Turturro, who I fucking love.
John Turturro walking around with eczema.
Yeah, and then there's some great cameos by Fisher Stevens.
Scratching his feet with chopsticks.
Yeah, his feet have eczema. He's got to wrap them in Crisco and Saran wrap. And, like, this is part of his character.
I would check it out, man.
It's really, it's fucking great. And then, like, he has to learn how to survive in the fucking prison.
No more.
It's great. I don't want to spoil it. Highly recommend it. Check it out. Who wants to go next? The Night Of.
I do.
I'll link to all this stuff in the show notes. Listener.
There you go.
JockandNerd.com/119. Del Hauer, what do you got?
All right, so almost in the same vein as Anthony, what I recommend is anybody who has Netflix, watch Stranger Things now.
Oh, damn it, you took mine.
Shit.
That was mine, too.
Damn it. I'm the only guy. I got to watch it.
It's really good. I have alternates. Matt.
Talk about it.
Set it up. It's fucking good.
All right, so again, this is one that if you go too deep into it, you're going to start giving a lot of stuff away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What it is it is this wonderful combination of all these different kind of 80s genre film tropes. So it's a mixture of like Steven Spielberg 80s, like kid comedies. So like Goonies and E.T. and stuff like that, mixed in with like Stephen King kind of horror stories. It's a small town in, I think it's Michigan, in 1983.
It
follows the story about four friends, four boys who are all probably about like anywhere from like 10 to 12 years old. Oh, it's in Indiana, I'm told.
Indiana.
Thank you for yelling in through the door, babe. it's set in Indiana, but it's these four boys, and they are, you know, everyone who listens to this podcast would love them. It's four kids in the 80s who are obsessed with Dungeons & Dragons. They hang out in the basement playing it all day. After one night when they're playing, three of the kids are going home. One kid winds up veering off course to go down like this back road, and gets chased down by what is some sort of a monster and disappears. And the story follows what happens when the family is trying to find out what happened to him. The friends are trying to find out what happened to him. The cops are trying to find out what happened to him. And they start to unravel this strange mystery involving in the town that just there's no way you could assume that you know where it's going before it ends.
Oh,
and like it's just every single episode, by the time it ends, you're like, fuck you, I have to
watch
the
rest of this. You can't not watch
the
whole thing.
I watched this all in one sitting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, let me put this on, and I was like, I gotta watch the rest of this shit.
This show, like the hype behind this show has been so strong lately that like I don't even like 80s movies.
I honestly feared it for that reason. Everybody and their mom was telling me, oh, if you haven't watched it, you have to watch this show. And immediately my thought was like, oh my God, I'm going to go in and like halfway through, I'm going to be like, this really isn't as good as everyone says.
Yeah, but I had no expectations. I watched it before it was hyped.
And even outside of that, like,
network skipped it.
Yeah, Carlos says
20. It's not even just like the story. It's not even just like the, you know, the 80s nostalgia to it or anything like that. Like, the acting is brilliant. The kids are amazing in this show.
Yes, they make it. This is the first time somebody has actually nailed the nostalgia 80s to the point where you would think this was actually made in 1983. They do old school credits in the beginning. There's like VHS glitching. The music is 80s.
The music is all like Vangelis style music from the early to mid 80s.
Oh my God. If you didn't know.
The beginning is from V. If you ever watched the show V,
The Visitors with the aliens, yeah,
like, dude, from the 80s, they copy the intro from that.
For someone of my generation, like, this is like when you were a kid, you saw these movies, you wanted to jump on your bike with your friends and go off and have an adventure, and they captured that so well. It's Goonies meets Close Encounters of the Third Kind meets Stand By Me meets E.T. There's a little bit of Silent Hill video game.
I was going to say, yeah, but on top of all like these feel-good sort of 80s movies, there's Silent Hill.
There's real scares.
There's a little bit of The Shining, and there's X-Files.
Yep. Nightmare on Elm Street. There's legit scares in this fucking thing. It's how they did this. And there's tons of superhero references. The kids love X-Men. They drop X-Men references. They're playing Dungeons & Dragons. They're just nerds. They're so lovable. Unknowns. Carlos said 20 networks skipped on this. Very
I literally
stupid.
Just texted my roommate, hey, when I get home, we're watching this.
Using Winona Ryder and Matthew Modine, brilliant, because these are like guys who were huge in the 80s. And I had a huge crush on Winona Ryder, all from like Welcome Home, Roxy Carmichael, right through Mermaids, through Beetlejuice era.
I want to bring up Carlos?
Yeah.
Susan?
Real
so 20 networks really skip this?
Yeah, I don't know
it
why.
Seems like a big mistake, huh?
I think the reason why is because outside of names like Matthew Modine and Winona Ryder, there's nobody you know in it, and there's nobody you know who worked on it.
It's created by the Duffer Brothers. I don't know who they are, but they fucking nailed it.
And that's the thing is, like, the creators, you don't know that name. You don't know the writers. You don't know the directors. They didn't have any kind of pull that a TV network would go like, oh, yeah, we definitely need to work with them.
Yeah.
It was picked up by Netflix based entirely on concept.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. Huge hit. Great.
Well, yeah. That's a good
– I think they wrote a couple of episodes of Wayward Pines. Did you ever see that show?
No,
oh, yeah,
I've
yeah,
heard
yeah.
of it.
But. That's got like a serious tone to it as well.
Such a similar feeling to it.
Yeah.
Anthony, you said, I remember I described the show to you with all those movies, and you were like, yeah, I never watched those movies. Or
yeah,
it wasn't
no,
your
when
thing.
You, when you brought up those 80s things, I mean, that doesn't resonate with me. I know of those. I've watched some of them, but like E.T., Fred, you know, all those Stephen King stuff. That's why I worried that this won't.
This movie is going to educate you about what it was like to fucking grow up in 83.
Honestly, I think if anything, I want to
– people, and they've enjoyed it as well. So
yeah, I was going to say, if anything, I want to see what Anthony's reaction is to it going in without having all of like the nostalgia hits while watching.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
I'm definitely going
to
watch.
Listen, I would do a whole show on this. I've been dying to fucking talk about Stranger Things with anybody. It's
well, if
so
it's as good.
Good
as you say, I'm a crazy binge watcher. I'll watch it in a day if it's as good as you say.
All right, we may do a show on it. Moving on, Ruggs, what do you got?
I had Stranger Things, and
I told you to have multiple. God damn it.
Hey, man.
Yeah, so I was busy. I was in Romania.
All right. Well, that's right.
The only thing that I saw that was the only thing
that I saw. Do you recommend Romania?
Can you recommend going to Romania?
I cannot recommend going to Romania.
Do not go there.
I saw The Good Dinosaur on the plane. That's the movie I watched.
What the fuck is that?
That was the Pixar one.
Stupid movie about a dinosaur.
That's a Pixar movie?
It's
a caveman. A cave boy.
Was it good?
No.
Okay. Moving on. I had a couple because I know – so both of my picks had already been taken. I'm going to go to my number three, which is the movie – it's on Netflix, 2015. It's called Dope. Directed,
I saw that.
The guy that's doing Flash,
The guy that's doing Flash, Rick Fumiyama, written and directed, starring a couple of unknowns, but also Tony Revolori, who's going to be Flash Thompson – in the Spider-Man movie, is in this. And
I'm saying weird that he's Flash Thompson.
All right, well, that is weird. And I believe one of the girls in here has also possibly been cast as Iris in the movie. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you're right. I think you're right.
Because he knows these people. Anyways, this is a movie set in the in modern-day Los Angeles about a bunch of kids who are 90s hip-hop geeks. They wear 90s hip hop clothes. The fucking soundtrack, I loved all the songs they played in the mid 90s was shit I was into. And it's pretty much like an urban version of Doug Liman's Go, where shit just happens. One thing leads to another. There's a girl that looks exactly like Lisa Bonet. It's eerie. And it's just a wild adventure of these kids, gangs, drugs,
guns. That's
her daughter. Wait, whose daughter?
That's Zoe Lisa Kravitz. Bonet. Lisa Bonet and Lenny Kravitz's
oh,
daughter.
Oh, that's why she looks exactly like Lisa Bonet. Dumbass. I was like, what the fuck? That looks just like Lisa Bonet. Dude. I'm looking
did you
here.
Just refer to him as dumbass? That's awesome.
Well, I deserved it.
Dumbass.
just red forming the shit out of you.
But yeah, no, it's a fun Rob. Great. You really don't know where the movie's going. And, the lead guy is really good. Fun movie, really well directed. I'm excited to see if he can handle a big budget.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up is, does this make you excited to see him on a big budget
well,
movie like Flash?
Look, I don't know because David Ayers, this is his first big budget movie also. You know, Marvel does this too,
to
but
be fair, you haven't seen Suicide Squad.
I know. But there's stuff out there. I'm saying Marvel does this too. Like
Marvel does it all the time.
You know, the Russo brothers fucking came from Community television. So this guy, I think he has the right aesthetic to work with Ezra Miller's kind of funny Flash.
The humor is definitely something that he knows how to work with, but yes. And that's especially because he wrote it. So he at least has the ability to look at a script handed to him and go, "This isn't going to be as funny as you need it to be."
Yeah, that's true. So he's got both control. However, the common thread amongst these fucking DC movies, the studio keeps stepping in, fucking it up.
Oh shit!
If they do that, then
as far as we know,
if that continues with this movie, then he's got no chance. Because again, this is like a small independent movie, and now he's jumping to here's $200 million, and you're going to make what we want you to make. How's that going to work out? We'll wait and see. But check out Dope. It's really fun. If you love the 90s hip hop, the fucking it's great. The sound, I was smiling the whole time every song that they used.
Truth is, when I first saw the trailer for it, I thought it was set in the 90s.
So did I.
Because they're all dressed like they're in the 90s. Yes. All it was 90s hip hop. I was like, all right, so it's a movie about kids in like the mid 90s dealing with like, you know, life and whatever.
And I would have watched that. Yeah, I was excited to watch that. This took it. I didn't know what to expect. It took it a step further and I loved it. It takes place now. The kids are just 90s hip hop geeks. And they got like a flat top and fucking loud ass shirts and everything. It's great. MC Hammer pants.
Legitimately, it's like all three of them stepped out of the first episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Absolutely. It's great. So good stuff.
Okay, that's a visual.
Yeah. All right. Good recommendations. Like I said, I'll put all those things in the show notes. Look, I got a little bit of listener feedback and we're going to wrap this up. Mr. Antihero, Kevin McPartland, he wrote in based on our last episode. Listener, I want you to check it out. It's when we went to the Godzilla Fest. You don't have to
you
be
don't
a
need to be a Godzilla.
No, you don't. And here's why. Listen to this comment. It's probably the best comment I've gotten in a while. He asks, where's the picture of what the nerd broke at G-Fest? I'm still recovering from the awkward.
Oh, shit.
There is some tasty, awkward audio in that provided by yours truly.
You
can hear me sweating. Ruggs, did you get a chance to listen to that?
Yeah, I listened to a lot of Jock and Nerd on my Romanian quest.
Well, what else were you going
to
do?
You know. Yeah, so it's weird because like I've been so used to listening to you guys. It's like hard for I'm on this show now. But I was listening to that, and it just sounded like typical Imran. When Imran does something wrong, he never like automatically apologizes. He waits for you to notice that you did something wrong first. Like just like, oh, maybe I can get away with this, and he kind of like walks
there
away.
There was no
like,
getting away with
that's typical this. Imran. That's the Imran that I know. Like, whenever he fucks up. Like, he doesn't automatically, like, oh, I'm sorry. He just waits to see if you say something first.
Oh, if you were there, you would have noticed it just became a staring contest. He's waiting on her to say something. She's waiting on him to apologize. They're both looking at each other with their mouths open.
Dude?
I apologized. I made it right. But at the moment, I was like,
it was legitimately one of those moments where I had to pause the podcast because I'm like, oh, God. Oh no, I feel this.
Yeah, that's yes. That's what I wanted. Listen, it was worth $400.
Is that what you wanted, you asshole?
That awkward cringe inducing moment is what I wanted. Look, if you join our Facebook group at jockandnerd.com/community, I've put the photo of what the thing looked like after. And I think I improved the pose because it used to look like 1998 Godzilla fighting original Godzilla, and now it looks like original Godzilla is getting filleted by the 1998 Godzilla, which I think that's a lot hotter.
Geek boner.
It's a lot hotter Godzilla statue already.
What is wrong with
Someone's got to be on top.
Stop it. You broke that man's art, and now you're making fun of it.
Look, I paid
So what happened? What was the outcome?
I paid for them to get it fixed.
So you said
a pretty hefty sum to get that fixed.
It was half of what that they were selling it for.
Jesus Christ.
Anyways, go listen to that episode. We're still getting tweets from our Chris Barrett Destiny episode, you guys. Jay at MLG Gaming 2015 says, I love the advice he gave. Very helpful. Frumper78 says, awesome podcast and interview. Glad to see the departure from fanboy stuff. Really, Rugboy is funny as shit. So, Delhauer, what did you think of that show? Did you get a chance to listen to that one?
Yes. I thought it was great, actually. It was
you don't
really
need to suck our
kind of
dicks. Just tell us.
I mean, like, you guys were so engaging and just like, honestly, I think it was nice because I know that you guys didn't go into it with like a massive knowledge for Destiny.
Right.
Yeah.
Going into it. So it was to have it be a lot more about the industry and the art side of it and just like his job instead of being like, oh God. And then, you know, and then this part of the game, like it was so great about blah, blah, blah. Like, as I know so many other podcasts, including my own, would do.
It was the one case
I think with Weekly Jump, it'd be more like, why does this suck?
Let me just say this. Yeah. Wait, one thing. This is the plan. I want to just point this out, the behind-the-scenes shit.
Oh, boy.
Is that Imran and I are talking about this, and he's just like, oh, Anthony disappeared.
He'll be
oh,
back.
Shit. Anyway, so Imran and I were talking about this, and he's just like, oh, I don't know shit about this game. What are we going to talk about? I don't know if it's a good idea. And then he goes and watches like three videos, and he's like, all right, I'm ready to do the interview.
I watched
like,
more than three. I watched a bunch of videos.
He watched a lot. Four. He watched a lot of shit, and he felt very confident.
I did.
And so I was thinking like he was going to hand the ball off to me in this thing, and the whole time Imran's just running to the end zone.
You had the second half. It was a good tag team. Look, it's the one case where it actually paid to not know shit about what the fuck you're talking about.
I liked it.
To be able to take a different approach to it instead of being like, I know so much about this game.
Right. No, I like that the guy said it's and you said his departure from fanboy stuff, but that's what I like. I love the creative process that I love learning about. And that's universal for everything, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Which proves that Imran can interview about anything.
I can fucking talk about anything. Test me. I dare you.
I feel like with Rugboy, when he's like, oh, well, you know, Imran just took the ball and ran with it. Like, how is that unusual?
Yeah, what do you expect?
Well, this, like, and with everything else, Imran kind of, if he doesn't know, he knows he can lean on them. But this one, he didn't know shit. And he, like... He went for it, man. He really went for it. Like, Imran's, like, good at, like, not letting you know if he actually knows about something. He just fakes it.
You not know shit about this?
See? You think I don't know about sports, but I know the rules. I know how sports work. I just don't give a fuck. That's all. But that was go check that out. That episode's doing...
Oh, shit about sports.
Finally. He got it just in time.
Finally fucking get the blab to work. Check out that episode. I want to talk about our Patreon for a second because, first of all, we're about to see Suicide Squad, and Ruggs and Anthony, I want to remind you to record your instant reactions and send them to me because, listener, if you support us on the Patreon, jockandnerd.com/Patreon, you will get to hear that before the review comes out. And it's literally us walking out of the theater. Here's what we thought coming out. Boom. You get it. For your support. And if you support us, we do fun things. Like maybe you got a company we can shout out. We can plug. For example, David Zika. Lovely supporter David Zika has an eBay store. Zika's Viral Comics. And I'll put links in the show notes. It's at stores.ebay.com/Zika's Viral Comics. And he's got a bunch of like Silver Age, Golden Age, old shit. Everything starts at 99 cents. High seller rating. Check it out. There's some weird, rare, all sorts of weird, rare stuff. He has some old Justice League and old Superman. But if you support us on Patreon and you got a business, I'll fucking plug it. I'll give a shit. Give us money. Jockandnerd.com/Patreon. Right, Anthony? Got anything to add to that?
I got these cheeseburgers, man. I'll suck your dick, man.
Yeah.
Wait, oh, that That's from Boys in the Hood.
Now that I've had to refresh my Evernote 3 or 4 times because my goddamn computer has been failing me, I don't know where the hell we're at right now.
Whatever. We're to the part where we are going to ask the listeners what they would like us to do for the next edition of What the Fuck Happened.
Oh, yes.
Our collaboration with the Ginger Geek Blogs.
Pick a DC movie. We hate DC.
No, well, we need to do a different non-DC movie because we've done that on the last one. The only movies that are ineligible at the moment, listener, Spider-Man 3, Fucktastic 4, and Batman and Robin. I renamed that movie, by the way. But we put it out on the interwebs. We had a couple of suggestions, like Blade Trinity or Steel or Green Lantern or
God, I gotta watch those movies
X-Men
again.
Last Stand.
People seem to be clamoring for Green Lantern. I saw
Green Lantern.
I saw Green one Lantern. Of them was somebody said to do Street Fighter Legend of Chun-Li, and I'll tell you now, I like that hurt me when I saw it. I was like, don't make me.
Is that Matt, gonna be
Matt, I'm in agreement. That might be the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. Like, that movie was awful.
Oh, boy. Well,
there's a scene in there where, what's his face? Who's playing the villain?
Oh, the dude playing Bison?
Yeah. He's from
Arrow. That's not Van Damme. That's different.
No, he's the guy that played Damian Dark.
Oh, Neil McDonough.
There's a scene. This is based off a video game.
Yeah.
There's a scene where he's punching something, and it sounds like it's a punching bag. It pans back. It's a fucking woman.
Ah.
Punching a woman tied up like a punching bag.
Whoa, wow.
Let's also remember this was the movie that gave us the origin of M. Bison's powers, and I'm pretty sure it involves him eating a baby.
That's how that happened.
There's that, too, and there's also – I think it's Chris Klein is his name.
Yeah.
Might have put on one of the worst acting performances I've ever seen in my life.
Man,
it's so bad.
I don't think I've ever
a character not from the game.
Not from the game, yeah. Some sleazy detective.
Well, look,
and the guy for the Black Eyed Peas was Vega.
Yes.
What?
Was.
Which Black Eyed Peas? Which one?
The one that's not Apple D app.
Oh,
the Filipino guy.
Oh,
the Filipino
Apple D app. Wow, that could be.
And Vega is like uniquely Spanish. Like that's his character, and they put a Filipino guy in that role.
This may be too much for
just because I guess he has long straight hair.
We already doing the show.
I think we just did. There we go. It's a mini, mini. What the fuck happened? But look, listener, if you have more ideas, just send them over. show@jockandnerd.com or tweet @jockandnerdcast or find us on Facebook or go to jockandnerd.com/contact. All the shit is there. I can't wait for the next one. We'll figure out. We'll pick one of these.
Something.
Yeah, I want to do non-DC because the last one was Batman and Robin. So let's do the other thing.
I was going to say, and our first two were both Marvel, so we could do
non-DC. We only did one. Okay, maybe that does. Maybe we do Green Lantern. I don't know. Look, thanks to all the networks that host our show, A Place to Hang Your Cape, We Be Geeks, Tangent Bound, and you can hear us on geekliferadio.com every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Central. Del Hauer, thanks for coming down and reviewing this movie with us. This was great.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I loved having
you. I feel like we'll be seeing him again pretty soon.
I think so. And I love that. Like you.
Oh, you may not be seeing me. Wink.
this show, you got the full Jock and Nerd experience being on this show. This is like all of the best stuff from all our different shows shoved together. Where can the listener find you? Plug your shit.
The listener can find me sometimes in writing, mostly in podcasts with How Do I Jump? That is hd1jump.com for our weekly jump podcast, which Imran was on about 4 weeks ago.
More me fucking faking my way through video game conversation. Always entertaining, people. Check it out.
Outside of that, you can find me on Twitter @MattDelhauer. I'm not going to spell it because you have to figure that out yourself, and then maybe you can earn the right to follow me on Twitter.
Ooh, try spelling that shit, people. Link in the show notes. Rugs, Rugs, where can they find you to harass you, you little felty, sexy
you
fucking bitch?
You can follow me on Twitter. Do it and be active. I like fighting with people on Twitter.
What is what's your Twitter?
I hate Dan Slott.
Oh, did you? Did you? You should change it to that.
No, it's @ReallyRugBoy. Because I'm really rug boy.
Oh, you
and,
are.
I'm back in the States, baby, and I love the U.S. of A.
Ruggs is also wearing a lovely Jock and Nerd t-shirt, the old ringer tee. You can get your very own as well as other stuff, jockandnerd.com/shop, hoodies, t-shirts, all that shit.
Yes, sir. And if you want to contact us, jockandnerd.com/contact. And it would really help if you go on, give us a nice rating and review on iTunes, jockandnerd.com/review.
And you can find us everywhere, man. Just go to jockandnerd.com. We're on Player FM, TuneIn, Google Play if you're on an Android, iTunes, Stitcher, all the links at jockandnerd.com. Thank you for hanging out and listening. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
And he's the nerd.
Hey, we'll check you next time.
I really want to do Green Lantern next.
You know what? Dahlhauer? Yay or nay?
I'm fine with that.
I think that
Because I was so hyped for that movie.
Yes.
And it was such a disappointment.
I also had a weird experience with that movie. I watched it in two halves, right? I watched the first half up until like the OS scene. And I was like, hey, this is actually pretty good. I don't know what the problem was. The next day, I go back to finish the movie. And I'm like, wow, I've never seen anything fall apart so fucking quickly.
Then you watched Fantastic Four and you realized it could fall faster.
Yes. At which point you were like, oh my god, that Green Lantern was like a masterpiece.
Green Lantern was good compared to
that squad, and the same thing's gonna happen.
Yeah, no.
Okay. I just thought of a recommendation.
Okay, spit it out. This is the post show. It's all
you go on YouTube.
Yeah.
All right. And I have two things. All right. Number one is if you want to see what the Godzilla movie is gonna look like, Google God Warrior by Hideaki Anno or whatever.
Okay.
The guy who it's basically like a 8-minute short of this like a gigantic kaiju thing that shows up over Tokyo and starts laying waste to it.
Ooh.
A lot of people who saw the Shin Godzilla movie compare the kind of action and stuff to this movie, this short film that he made.
So that might have been like a proof of concept film for him or something.
All right.
I was going to say, I was watching the trailer when you guys were talking about it, and yeah, it really looks like he just kind of like glides.
Yeah, he's just kind of slowly moves.
And things just fall down around him.
Yeah, without actually walking or something. Like somebody's pushing him.
I feel like that the Japanese filmgoers are not going to shit on their Godzilla because it's like they just finished shitting on ours.
Yeah.
And then they're like, we can't say like, ours sucks.
Well, your Godzilla's too fat.
Yeah.
Well, what about your Godzilla? It's perfect. How dare you even talk about that? Yeah. Shut up.
It's been 12 years for them. They're not going to fucking shit talk this movie.
No, they're not.
Hey.
And the second one. Anthony, you want to keep going?
No, Anthony, you're cool. Anthony, you guys, he's going to Vegas again.
I'm going to listen to Rug Boy's recommendation, and then I got to go home and start packing for Vegas.
Was this the third time this year already?
A second time this year. Tenth time overall.
Tenth time to Vegas. You better wear the goddamn jock and nerd tank top again.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
All right, Rugs, go. The best. What else do you got?
This is just personally funny for me. You ever watched the movie Raging Bull? Martin Scorsese?
Sure.
Well, there is a thing called Raging Fred where they take Fred Flintstone and they put the Raging Bull audio to Fred Flintstone and it's fucking hilarious.
Oh, no. I like that.
There is the scene where it's the "Did you fuck my wife?" between Fred and Barney.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Wait, so it's like they use Flintstone clips?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then just
create, they edit Flintstone clips to match up with the audio.
That's fucking genius, actually. What a great idea. I'm going to have to check that out. Raging Fred. I'll put both of those things in the show notes at the end. Jugger Nerd!
Anybody can jump in. Jumping is fun. Everybody likes jumping. All right, let me tell you a little story about Romania. Don't ever go to Romania if you smell like garlic. All right, because people think they try to ward off vampires, and they don't understand that's just how I smell. Anyhow, so everybody thought that I was trying to ward off vampires, so people would like run away, and you know, thinking that they were after me. So that's a little tip. Okay, come on in. How do I get you to come in here?